Palestinian prisoners also released. The exact timing due to be announced later today. We have kind of been here before, but after that attack on Qatar by Israel, not with an American president in place who appears reluctant to green light. Well, you tell me what you think is going to happen next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, representatives from Israel and Hamas are set to sign the first phase of a deal to end the war in Gaza. The two sides reached agreement at talks in Egypt overnight, with a formal ceasefire expected to begin later. An exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian prisoners could take place in the coming days. Sir Keir Starmer welcomed the deal, speaking on his visit to India.
This agreement must now be implemented in full, without delay, and be accompanied by the immediate lifting of all restrictions on life-saving humanitarian aid to Gaza. The UK will support these crucial immediate steps and the next stages of the talks to ensure the full implementation of the peace plan.
Israeli troops could begin their withdrawal to an agreed-upon line within 24 hours. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks says many of the details remain unclear.
There's going to be a huge amount of interest in understanding where that line is physically being drawn. Is this in any sense going to be a full-scale Israeli military withdrawal? Because the devil in all of this is going to be in the details, and where those Israeli troops are being pulled back to will be critical. The Israelis also say they're going to allow hundreds of trucks of humanitarian assistance, so urgently needed in Gaza, to enter the territory every single day going forward.
In other news, employment advisers are to be stationed in GP surgeries as part of efforts to get sick and disabled people back into work. There are currently more than 2.8 million people signed off with long-term sickness. The Work and Pensions Secretary, Pat McFadden, has told LBC that 300,000 people could benefit.
I don't want people to be written off, and nor do I want the allocation of sickness benefits to be a one-off lifetime verdict, when sometimes someone's conditions can change, their situation can change, and we just shouldn't write them off.
A man has been arrested on suspicion of kidnap after a woman was reportedly forced into a van in East London. Police were called to a street in Canary Wharf last Tuesday night. Officers say they've been unable to identify the woman's identity, and they are concerned for her welfare. Five water firms have been told they can raise bills by up to 5% more than previously agreed. They argued original price controls meant they wouldn't be able to meet their regulatory requirements. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 29 at 95.04. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, dry and bright across the south, cloudier further north with some light patchy rain in Northern Ireland. A high of 19 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Quaker is an official sponsor of Team GB, and rightly so. After all, the rowing team's motto is "Oats move boats." But why stop there? Team GB, if you're listening, try these on for size. Quaker sachets move Bob sleighs. Ugly bowl, forward roll. One for the gymnasts. The world's your stage when you eat some beige. Maybe just stick to oats move boats. Quaker. Deliciously real, deliciously ugly. Sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the story understandably dominating the international news headlines at the moment is the Gaza peace deal that is due to be signed later today. My information was that they could be putting pen to paper pretty much as we speak, but that process has not commenced yet. When it does, it will be in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, and it will involve negotiators from the Israeli government and from Hamas. Donald Trump is, I mean, inevitably trying to take all the credit for it. And I think it's probably fair to say that he deserves some, chiefly post the attack on Qatar, for making sure that his Netanyahu understood that his patience is finite, which is a big shift on previous ceasefire agreements, which were broken for various reasons and in various ways, but always seemed to hinge upon the fact that no consequences would follow the breach. One of his key allies in the Israeli cabinet has already made it clear that he will not be voting for this deal. That's Itamar Smotrich, one of the very far-right members of Benjamin Netanyahu's administration. And that is an illustration, of how many moving parts there are. And I don't know whether or not I'm the only one who is feeling a little bit more cautious or trepidatious than some of the public figures that we've already heard from this morning. I don't know what the diplomacy of this is, whether or not you actually increase the momentum for peace by greeting it in such a celebratory fashion. I pray, and that's not a word you've heard me use very often on this program, I pray this works. If it works, give Donald Trump the Miss World crown, the Nobel Peace Prize, whatever it is. Today is not the day to be reminding you of the fact that he's calling for elected officials in his own country to be arrested and putting armed troops on the ground in his own country's cities where the local government doesn't want them and there's obviously no need for them. We covered that yesterday, but you know, even a stop clock can be right twice a day. And the notion that a peace deal is just about to be realized, one that would stay in place, unlike the last two or three, is something devoutly, I beg your pardon, it's Bezalel Smotrich, Itamar Ben-Gvir. It's Bezalel Smotrich who has made it clear he will not vote for the deal. I suspect most Israel watchers would expect Ben-Gvir to be in a similar slot, but I think I mixed up their first and second names. And that's the problem I've got this morning, and the one that I'm going to ask for your help with. It's about the relationship between hope and despair in many ways. There's an absence of knowledge. That's always tricky in these situations. For example, how many people feel qualified to provide a quick précis of what happened to the previous ceasefire arrangements, presided over and signed in some cases when Joe Biden was in the White House? I mean, the provenance, if you like, the fact that they didn't work adds to this sense of caution. But the levels of celebration suggest that something different is going on here. The levels of celebration suggest that people think this one's going to stick. The main reason why people think this one is going to stick is probably contained within the fact that Smotrich is poised to vote against it. And that is that it appears that Trump has said keeping the far right wing of your own party happy to keep yourself in power is no longer something that the United States of America is prepared to countenance. And that means, I think, that the end of the road is nigh for Netanyahu's political career, surely, because the only thing that has allowed him to postpone Judgment Day in an Israeli court is the fact that the country is at war. And you know, and I know, that saying anything with certainty at this moment in such an extraordinary process is extremely difficult. So I think we'll talk about uncertainty, and we'll address it with hope. Tell me how hopeful you are. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need. On the question of the Nobel Peace Prize, as I say, make him Miss World, if that actually helps this stick. But it's not really something that he should even be considered for, because it's awarded for events in 2024. This year's Nobel Peace Prize is awarded for events in 2024, which, of course, was not a year in which he was even president. He's lobbied for it in a way that we've never seen before, even making up wars that he claims to have resolved. But I mean, the stakes are so high here, that the carnage in Gaza particularly, so utterly hideous and unconscionable, that anything that brings it to a close is to be welcomed, is to be greeted. And of course, in Donald Trump land, facts like that don't matter. Little facts like, you know, you'd probably have to do a little bit more than announce a ceasefire to get a Nobel Peace Prize. You'd want to sit around for a few months and see whether or not it has actually been achieved. In Donald Trump land, the piece of paper would be worth at least as much as the actual piece. And who cares that it's an award that would only be given retrospectively for events in 2024, even though this has happened in the closing months of 2025. Tony Blair's back in the picture as well. I keep saying to you, there are so many moving parts. But I'm really not exaggerating, and there's no other phrase that quite fits the bill. How do you greet this news? I think this is one of those mornings where any attempt at putting too much flesh upon the bones of what we know would be, if not doomed, then certainly a little bit pointless. I just want to know how you greet this news. And it means we are in the realms of feelings at least as much, if not more, than the realms of fact. Unless you are Smotrich, Bezalel Smotrich, and some of his allies in the Israeli government, I don't really see how you can greet the news with anything but hope, or even hope and a large side order of joy and celebration. And yet, as I said to you a moment ago, I can't help feeling a little bit cautious, a little bit more trepidatious than much of the coverage allows. And that's my answer to the question of how do you greet this news, with absolutely 100% hope, with fingers crossed so tightly you could almost break them, but with the knowledge that previous ceasefires have failed. There was even one in November of 2023, a short ceasefire again then that saw the release of 70 Israeli hostages held in Gaza and 210 Palestinian detainees. The details of this one aren't that different. But the reasons why perhaps the previous ones were able to be broken with a degree of impunity are no longer in place. And that involves the United States president removing, if you like, questioning and unqualified, undiluted support for the Israeli Prime Minister, to the huge annoyance, of course, of as we've discussed, some of his colleagues. So let's do it. Let's get the phone lines open. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. We'll keep it in the realms of reality. I've already seen one text this morning asking whether or not Hamas will now let aid into Gaza, which displays a degree of ignorance that, frankly, you can probably see from space. So the question that I'm asking you is how you greet this news. And in a way, if I were to personalise it, I'd like you to... do you know what I'd really like you to do today, if it doesn't sound a little bit irresponsible? And I'd only say irresponsible given the size of the stakes that are under discussion. I'd really like you to dial up my optimism. Because it must be nice to feel even more hopeful than I do. Yeah, you look at this scenario, you look at the characters involved, you look at the stakes, you look at the history, and you find yourself thinking, oh, please God, let this work. I know, I don't care who takes the credit for it. Let Mr. Blobby take the credit for it. Please God, it works. But I'm not anywhere close to saying, yes, it will. I see people taking to the streets. I see reports from Gaza, reports from Israel of great celebration. And I kind of found myself thinking, I hope you're right. But I currently, and I don't have personal investment in this, but I do have a deep sense of horror at what has unfolded. I had an almost unprecedented sense of horror on October the 7th. And it has only grown since. Man's inhumanity to man, regardless of where they were born, where they come from, what religion their parents invited them into. Man's inhumanity to man never ceases to shock and to horrify. But how hopeful are you that this time this ceasefire will actually hold in a way that, well, I'd have to say in a way that no ceasefire has ever held before in this region. Regardless of the most recent events, the post-October the 7th scenario, no ceasefire has ever actually held, because October the 7th itself was a breach of a ceasefire. How hopeful are you? I mean, God, this is what I meant about moving parts, because when I say ceasefire, what do you hear? Do you hear that there will never be any more blood spilt in the Middle East? Hamas will hang up their suicide vests and never again take an Israeli life? The IDF will, take up gardening What does a ceasefire mean to you? Does it just mean this latest bout of bloodshed has come to an end? To what cost? At what cost? Gaza has been annihilated. Or does it just mean the big one? Does it mean, yeah, that's it now? Because it can't, I don't think it can mean that, can it? Until the question of a two-state solution is settled, finally, and forever, one way or the other. And all of these reasons are why I wonder more how you greet this and perhaps how you dial up the optimism. Because in the end, that's all there is. Egyptian media reporting that the Gaza ceasefire has come into effect. So we will watch for that immediately, because the last ceasefires that have come into effect have been broken fairly quickly. And I don't know why. I mean, why am I the only one at the moment sitting here thinking, oh, lordy lord, I hope this one goes? Because I don't want to be. I want to be on the side of the people dancing in the streets and cheering and celebrating. Maybe you can help me get there. The number you need to do so, or indeed to join me in, shall we say, rather more cautious optimism than some people are displaying, 0345-6060-973 is the number that you need. US, Qatari and Turkish officials joined the third day of indirect negotiations between Israel and Hamas yesterday as cautious optimism grew that a lasting truce to end the two-year war in Gaza could be on the horizon. And this morning we learned that it is. What does it mean? What does a lasting truce mean? And how hopeful are you?
LBC.
I'm always up before the birds and the kids. Good thing Costa Express is always up too. Early starts are easier with great coffee. And if I grab one for Bob, I might even get some decent company. Large cappuccino for the bloke who's half asleep.
Oh, you legend. Now that's a proper coffee.
Should kick in just in time for you to remember which end of the screwdriver to use.
Costa Express. Quality coffee every time.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
We are now approaching your destination. Time for a visit home, because you miss your parents loads. Just remember, your room is now their yoga studio. But don't let couch surfing put you off. They absolutely can't wait to see you too.
Travel by train with Avanti West Coast and be with them sooner. Book early and save up to 42% at avantiwestcoast.co.uk. Exclusions and limitations apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
17 minutes after 10 is the time. I'm reading one article, BBC's Middle East correspondent. This is a significant moment, but there is no guarantee that a peace deal for Gaza will happen, as crucial details still need to be worked out. And that is the thing that I set in relief against the borderline euphoria that has understandably broken out in some quarters. And you can't, well, there are two things you can't ignore. You can't ignore the absolutely crucial role that Donald Trump will have played in this, regardless of all his other myriad failings. But neither can you ignore his narcissism, which is why it's been announced today, the day before the Nobel Peace Prize Committee in Oslo makes its most recent judgments. Judgments which shouldn't include him, because they deal exclusively with events in 2024, when he wasn't president. But since when did facts and logic matter in the Trump universe? So part of my misgivings are probably built upon the fact, upon the choreography. You know, what you want is something absolutely signed, sealed and delivered, not something put together in order to allow Donald Trump to make a big announcement 24 hours before the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded. I don't know. And again, obviously, nothing is agreed until everything is agreed, is a helpful mantra to bear in mind at these moments. But would it be inappropriate or insensitive to say I'm envious of the people who are a little more excited than I am? Yes, I think that is probably the best way to describe it. How are you feeling? How are you greeting this news? 0345 60 60 973. Sam's in Bromsgrove. Sam, what would you like to say?
Hey, James, how are you?
Very well. I don't like your phone line much, Sam. I don't know if there's anything you can do about it.
Is it better now?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. I come from a Palestinian heritage, and I went on my first protest when I was 12 years old in London. I'm 44 now. And, and I met a rabbi, and I asked him, I said, I'm really curious, why are you on this demonstration? And he said, I'm also Palestinian, and I will only go back when it's called Palestine. And that sort of started my journey of understanding this has got nothing to do with religion. This has got to do with a people who belong to a land. Today, you know, you want hope. I can see that the last 2 years, a lot of people like me have gone back and started studying their roots, which we haven't done. I mean, I didn't. And there's a lot of fear at the moment because we just don't want to keep going back to the first situation. Gaza has been bombed multiple occasions, and each time we think this is it, you know, the world's going to wake up. Israel has to be stopped from doing this. The Palestinians have to be able to travel, have to have freedom, have to have life, just like everybody else. And it always goes back to the same square. So there is some fear. However, we can see the populations have changed in the West. I don't know much about what's happening in Israel.
Mm. We won't find out comprehensively, but we'll be catching up with Noga Tarnopolsky in Jerusalem in about 10 minutes' time. She'll give us an idea of what the feeling is on the ground there. But how would you typify how you feel? Do you feel that we have been here before in the broad sweep of the last decades, the last 30 years, as opposed to the last 2 years?
Yeah, I think that we have reached a point where being just, you know, spouting out propaganda without historic context and without factual information about the Palestinians is no longer able to win you votes in the West. And I think that is a very, very important shift. And I've seen it. I'm a local councillor, and I, on the doorstep, people are really saying to me, well done for speaking up. That wouldn't have happened. I live in a very non-ethnic minority place. That wouldn't have happened. Even at the, you know, a year ago, it wouldn't have happened. So that pushes, I think, politicians to understand the real situation. And the real situation is very simple. There are two people in that area, and they both deserve exactly the same rights. And I say this as somebody whose father has been ethnically cleansed. We have title deeds to land, but I tell you today, an Israeli child is no less important to me than a Palestinian child. Palestinian children,
yes.
I mean, I don't want a single person living without mum or dad, without a limb. And I don't want, and the same thing goes for the Israeli children, children or children, I don't care. You know, they're born free and they should die free. They're born needing love and affection from their family. And we just cannot take the fact, when I listen to how the Israelis speak about the Palestinians, it's very, very, very tough. And I've told a couple of friends of mine who are Israelis, who are not on the left side, who actually have been radicalized, in my view, in the last 2 years.
Okay,
2 years ago, I said to them...
Now, I'm going to interrupt you now, if I may. I hear you, but I just need to steer you back to the phone-in that we're having today, if I may.
Okay.
I mean, it would be crass to ask you to put things on a scale of 1 to 10, but I think what you're saying, in answer to a question I haven't asked, but it is really interesting, is that you feel that the last 2 years have applied, and this would not have been Netanyahu's intention, but they have applied a magnifying glass to the plight of the Palestinian people, in a way that would make a return to normal service much, much harder for an Israeli prime minister of his worldview.
I think so, because I think that it's no longer possible for a British politician to not understand the ins and outs of all of this. Before, they were given talking points and they just stuck to them, whereas now the populations have been so well educated about the situation.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I thought probably a little later when the ink has dried would be the time to have a look at what may or may not have changed in the longer term. But you're quite fair, quite right to bring it into the conversation at this point, because it is part of an answer to the question I'm asking, which is how do you greet this news? Listen, it's too early to pop champagne corks, isn't it? Metaphorically speaking. It simply is, and yet the temptation to do so is huge, because as Sam has beautifully expressed, if you're motivated entirely by a desire to see less death, then this has to be great news. But we have been here or hereabouts before. In January of this year, there was a ceasefire that gave communities in Gaza some respite from the suffering. People were able to put their loved ones to rest. Some aid was allowed in. A transfer of hostages from multiple locations in Gaza to Israeli authorities was presided over by the Red Cross, and detainees from Israeli detention centres to Gaza and the West Bank moved in the opposite direction. And then in March of 2025, aid delivery was suspended and the humanitarian crisis worsened. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be, what's the word? I'm not a pessimist or a party pooper, but equally, I want the grounds for hope on this occasion. And I think, and of course a lot of people who like me think he's a hideous human being and an appalling president, I think Donald Trump provides grounds for hope. The problem is he's entirely irrational and inconsistent. But he is the biggest grounds for hope, because he appears to have run out of patience with Benjamin Netanyahu, or, if we're going to be really honest about things, I think he's calculated that his own personal path to the Nobel Peace Prize that he so obviously craves involves abandoning Netanyahu to the, to the criticisms and possible abandonments of his own, the far-right members of his own cabinet. So Trump possibly is prioritizing his own ego above support for the Israeli administration. I think that's probably pretty close to the truth. And the problem with that, of course, is that if that's what he's doing on a Thursday, goodness knows what he's going to be doing on a Friday, a Saturday, a Sunday, or a Monday. And that is where some of my misgivings come from. Trump is the biggest reason to think that this will work. But if you're putting all your faith on an entirely unreliable human being, I mean, a demonstrably, a famously, an infamously unreliable human being, then, as I say, I don't think it's time to start popping metaphorical champagne corks. Thank you, Sam. John's in Leeds. John, what would you like to say?
I think anything that ends the slaughter has got to be regarded as a positive. I don't regard Donald Trump as anything like a positive influence on this. He stood next to a person that's accused of genocide on extremely strong evidence and called him by his first name. He's not an independent.
Yeah, but how do you preside over a ceasefire without speaking to the people who are at war with each other?
But the point is, it's the last.
No. The point is, how do you negotiate a ceasefire without speaking to the people who are at war?
Oh, you've got to speak to both of them. But to do a fair ceasefire, you can't treat one as your best buddy and the other people as people that you're going to exterminate if they don't do what you tell them to do.
Well, you can, because he has. And they're about to put pen to paper in Sharm el-Sheikh.
But the point is, anybody could have come in with that position. How much
why didn't they?
Annihilated. What are they going to do?
Listen, nobody holds Donald Trump in lower regard than I do, but respectfully, you sound ridiculous. This is the closest the world has come to peace since October the 7th. I think by any viable or fair account, you've got the far-right members of the Israeli cabinet are furious to the point of not planning to support it. It possibly leaves Benjamin Netanyahu in the political wilderness. He could be in an Israeli courtroom by the end of the year. And you're trying to find reasons to criticise Donald Trump for literally dealing with the people he had to deal with to get any ceasefire over the line. How on earth are you going to tell Benjamin Netanyahu that he's run out of road if you're not having warm relations with him?
I certainly wouldn't have been addressing him on first terms basis. And I've been
so your problem with this process is the fact that he called Netanyahu by his first name?
Problem with this...
John, that's just nuts, mate. Just listen to yourself. We're on the brink of peace after a war that has left tens of thousands of people dead. And your primary objection is that he used Netanyahu's first name when he spoke to him.
James, we're not on the...
Why are you using my first name?
Because The issue in this case...
This is a ridiculous conversation. I mean, Liz, have I missed the point or something? Are you making a more substantive argument beyond the fact that he used his first name?
Yeah, the more substantive argument is that Trump is not an independent peacemaker. He's not got the two sides together and negotiated the solution.
Well, I'm afraid he has. I can't say it often enough. Nobody holds him in lower regard than I do. I think he's a morally depraved individual, and I think his motivation here is almost certainly narcissism and egotism. But it doesn't mean that the things you can see with your own eyes haven't happened. And listen, mate, before you go, if you are honestly reaching for the fact that he called Netanyahu by his first name as a reason to pour cold water upon the enthusiasm with which this announcement has been greeted, then you are actually and objectively ridiculous. I say that with love. I say that with love and kindness, but it is one of the daftest responses to a question I've asked on this radio station that I've ever heard in 20 years.
No, the issue is that the guys, the Hamas has had to surrender because we're threatened with being massacred if they didn't.
That's not the issue. The issue is that Netanyahu has had to do the thing that has absolutely enraged his own cabinet members, because he has been told that the undiluted, unqualified support for breaching previous ceasefires, for banning the ingress of aid into Gaza, has now been removed by the American president. I mean, that's just the evidence of your own eyes and ears. The announcement that Hamas will be annihilated if they don't sign up to the deal, that's been true since October the 7th. The process of annihilation is 2 years old. It's left nearly 70,000 people dead, just shy of 20,000 children. The idea that it could suddenly get worse is ridiculous. It would just carry on as normal, unless Israel stopped. And it looks like that he's boxed them, or they have been boxed into a position where it has stopped. Two things can be true at the same time. Donald Trump can be a truly despicable person, and he can also, as Chris writes, achieve something worthwhile in his life, even if he's done it for all the wrong reasons. Picking upon the fact that he called Netanyahu by his first name, I mean, if it wasn't such a serious matter, I'd be laughing my head off. Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
Representatives from Israel and Hamas are set to sign the first phase of a deal to end the war in Gaza. The two sides reached agreement at talks in Egypt overnight, with a formal ceasefire expected to begin later. An exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian prisoners could take place in the coming days. Sir Keir Starmer says it is a moment of profound relief. In other news, hate crimes recorded by police have risen by 2% in a year. New figures show forces in England and Wales recorded almost 116,000 offences in the 12 months to March. LBC weather, dry and bright with sunny spells across the south, cloudier further north with some light patchy rain. A high of 19 degrees.
LBC. Across the UK, people like Phil face their toughest challenges alone.
It's a pain that I feel like the body can't comprehend losing a child, because you are not supposed to outlive your children.
LBC's charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support people like Phil.
It's kind of a family that you never wanted to be a part of, and you would never choose to be a part of it. But now you're in it, you don't know what you'd do without.
You can change lives. Donate now at makesomenoise.com. Proudly supported by Furniture Village.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World, because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Imagine the varifocal lens of the future, personalized to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behavior. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at Essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:34 is the time, and indeed it is in Jerusalem in approximately an hour and a half that the Israeli government will convene to vote on this plan. If formally approved, the ceasefire will immediately go into effect and Israeli troops will begin to withdraw to an agreed upon line. We do not yet know where that line would be, but we do know that Israel would immediately allow 400 aid trucks to enter Gaza daily during the first 5 days. But the first three of those 5 days involve the 72-hour countdown for Hamas to release the remaining hostages that it holds in Gaza. So when I tell you that there are a lot of moving parts, I am not exaggerating. I wonder today how you are greeting this news. I wonder also why there is not a little more caution. Some of the reporting that I'm seeing has got caution, but some of it has not. And the reason why I'm burbling uncharacteristically is because I'm just waiting for Nogatana Polsky in Jerusalem's line to be fully established. He has steered us through some of the horrible moments in this saga, and she is here now to tell me first and foremost whether the end is in sight. Noga,
good to see you, James.
Well,
it seems it is. You know, it's hard to make it feel real.
Yes.
And it feels so sudden, but it does seem, even if the end of the war isn't exactly upon us, but it seems that the beginning of the end of the war has started. The ceasefire actually went into effect, believe it or not, a few minutes ago at noon on the hour Cairo time. We haven't yet seen pictures of the signatures on the documents, but we were informed that the ceasefire has gone into effect. And that the Israeli hostages, the remaining hostages, apparently both those still alive and the dead should be released. We're hearing different things, but in the 48-hour period between Saturday and Monday, they should all be freed. And the United States and Qatar have offered firm guarantees to Hamas that Israel will not restart the war. I hope you can see me.
I can see crystal clear. Don't worry. Don't press any more buttons. You've gone upside. There we are. You're back.
Anyway, absolute guarantees that Israel cannot restart the war once the hostages are freed, which is, I'll remind you what happened last March with a very similar agreement. Israel walked away from phase two at that time. So right now, there are guarantees that Israel can't do that again.
I mean... You can't really answer this question. Nobody can. But that obviously, you've answered the question I was about to ask you, is what has changed? What has changed most obviously is that the White House have offered guarantees that Israel will not resume its attacks after the hostages have been released. There will be an awful lot of people wondering whether Donald Trump's word can be trusted, won't there?
Yes, I think a few other things have changed. I think that it's fair to say that the pressure Qatar is exerting on Hamas, and not just Qatar.
Mm.
Qatar and its partners in Turkey, in Saudi Arabia, in the United Arab Emirates, even Jordan and Lebanon signed on to this deal. So there is vast pressure on Hamas to call it a day, to just end the war. That's one thing that has changed. And another thing that's changed, James. One is that the United States offered Qatar an almost NATO-like pact of security, so that what this means de facto is that whichever Hamas members, leaders, commanders end up in exile in Doha, in Qatar, as they have in the past, they basically have lifetime immunity now, also guaranteed by the United States. That is a very serious win for them. And the other thing is that apparently, as a result of Israel's failed effort to eliminate the Hamas leadership in Doha and Qatar just last month, the White House really got into gear. And so there has also been extraordinary pressure from the part of Donald Trump and the White House team on Prime Minister Netanyahu. My understanding is that neither side had really any wiggle room, that to a certain extent, these talks in Sharm el-Sheikh, in this Egyptian resort, have been a little bit forced because the United States has basically come in like a sheriff and said, this is the deal. Now, there are also dangers hidden here, James, because, of course, a Trump-style deal has several principles, but is short on details. And this could also quite quickly complicate matters when each side claims, no, but we thought it meant this or we thought it meant that. This isn't yet completely, you know...
Sure.
A certain peace.
Nothing is agreed until everything is agreed, which was a phrase that was popular during the Northern Ireland peace process. Where does it leave Netanyahu? Well, actually, before that, we know that Smotrich has already revealed that he's not going to vote for this deal when the Israeli cabinet convenes in about an hour and 20 minutes' time. There's no prospect of him being on the winning side in that meeting, is there?
I don't think so. The cabinet actually is convening surprisingly late, in about 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
I don't exactly know why, but that said, the ceasefire has already gone into effect. So again, we're seeing a situation where the cabinet vote, which will include a vote on those Palestinian prisoners to be released, seems to be a little bit pro forma. But Smotrich, this right, very ultra-extremist right-wing finance minister, he and his ministers, the ministers representing his party, will vote against it, as will the Interior Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, and his ministers. One of Smotrich's women, Orit Struk, has demanded that the party leave the government, but none of this seems to be having an impact. The Smotrich is not taking his party out of the government for now. I think they all want to be able to take some credit for the joy that will come the minute Israelis actually get to see their hostages out and free.
That's going to be an incredible moment.
I don't think anyone will quit. Sorry?
That will be a truly incredible moment, won't it?
Yes, and I'm gearing up for it. You know, after, just personally, as a journalist, after so many long months of covering misery and more misery, I look forward to being able to cover this crucial moment with the liberation of the final Israelis held by Hamas after more than 2 years.
That's an incredible moment. I mean, it'd be very hard to put it into words, but I know if anybody can, you can, Noga. Where does all this leave Netanyahu?
Well, it's unclear. Netanyahu really did have this agreement strong-armed on him. When he got to the White House last Monday, let's remember that he had just given a speech at the UN the Friday before, so we're talking 10 days ago, in which he said that we're not done yet, the job's not done, and we're going to finish it up. The war's continuing. That was Friday. By Monday, he was in the White House. He was given an apology to read to the Qatari Prime Minister, handed this by Donald Trump. I would say in a fairly humiliating situation, forced to read out a pre-written apology for this failed strike on the breached Qatari sovereignty, even though it didn't aim at Qatari individuals. And then he was taken to a press conference with Donald Trump, where he said, I accept the premises. So these were the 20 principles. This is not where Netanyahu wants to be. And now what's happening, what we see happening, he's trying to parlay this into his own victory. So he says that the only reason we have achieved such a wonderful, marvelous deal is because of the military pressure that he insisted on. And I don't know whether or not Israelis will believe it. They might. But the fact of the matter is this deal was available to Israel about 18 months ago, presented by Joe Biden. Substantially the same deal.
Don't say that in Donald Trump's hearing, will you?
Today it's Donald Trump. And apparently Israel's expecting Donald Trump's envoys and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and the envoy, Steve Witkoff, to come to be, land in Israel straight from Egypt as early as this afternoon, maybe to keep a good eye on the cabinet vote. And Donald Trump himself has said that he may be in Israel as early as Sunday. If that is the case, what it's telling us is that he wants to be the one to get credit for the liberation of the hostages. He wants to be here when it happens. If he comes a few days later, it's similar. But Netanyahu is trying to parlay this into his own success and the victory picture that he's wanted to have all along.
And ditto the leaders of Hamas, who will now be enjoying lifelong immunity in relative luxury in Qatar for the rest of their days. So, I mean...
That's one of the most astonishing twists in this twisty war.
And Trump deserves credit. Joe Biden may have put together an identical plan, but they didn't sign up to it, and it didn't stick. Why do you think that attack on Qatar has resonated so violently in the White House? I mean, is it going to be diplomacy that's been brought to bear, or is it because Trump's not a big fan of rules and laws and what have you? So it won't be the breach of international law that was the problem. Do we have any idea why that has appeared to be such a big deal breaker for the entire relationship between the White House and Netanyahu?
Yes, we do have some ideas about what happened. Interestingly, James, I'm not sure that this Israeli strike was a breach of international law 100%, because these were terror chieftains who were ensconced in Doha. But it didn't turn out to matter in this case, the law. What did matter is that Qatar was caught surprised. And what mattered even more is that the White House was surprised. I think this was a moment in which we saw on the international stage, not just domestically, Prime Minister Netanyahu's hubris. Remember, again, that he ordered that strike against the advice of his own military leaders. The Israeli army advised against that strike at the time. And Netanyahu decided to undertake it, and he kind of played around with the White House, which is a very dangerous thing to do. He let the Pentagon know at the very last minute, when basically the missiles were already being launched or were a minute away from being launched. And then he leaked to some of his favorite journalists that he had informed that Israel did this alone, but that he had informed the White House in time.
Right.
And I think that the White House was enraged, first of all, because of that manipulation, but more so because of a melange of interests. Donald Trump has very significant personal financial interests with Qatar. Remember that Qatar also bought him a new Air Force One recently. And the United States has its largest Mideast base by far, its number one base in Qatar.
Yes.
I think Donald Trump was enraged by this lack of courtesy, let's say.
Well, because he took it personally. That's the crucial point. I hadn't thought of
exactly.
It like that. He took it personally. How dare you do this? I've got a base, he would think. Not even we. I've got a base
exactly.
in Qatar.
Exactly. That's what I think we're seeing. Plus, remember, Netanyahu has a complex relationship himself with Qatar, complex and damning.
Yes.
He is the guy who got Qatar to funnel more than $1 billion to Hamas over many years so as to keep Hamas floating in Gaza and thus destroy the Palestinian national project by keeping Hamas viable as against the Palestinian Authority. His top aides are not only accused of being on the Qatari payroll, his top aides working with him in the prime minister's office were simultaneously on the Qatari payroll during this war and are now under arrest for it.
Yes.
But one of the questions that's not in question is that they did receive the money. If they did so legally or illegally seems to be a bit of a question yet. But no one is denying they were paid for by Qatar. So Netanyahu is very complicated with Qatar, and I think he found himself in a kind of pincer with Qatar on the one side, the United States on the other. And remember, Israel is virtually an international pariah now, so he cannot lose Donald Trump.
This is an extraordinary analysis. I should have got you on at 10 o'clock and spared my listeners my own attempts to make sense of the situation and sort of pontificate upon what's... Can I read you a couple of texts? Because it is actually on a personal level. It's lovely to see you looking and sounding so happy, Noga. It really is.
And I'm on no sleep.
That goes with the territory. After all these months, says Simon, you can now hear the joy in Noga's reporting. And Marita says, I love Noga. I appreciate everything she's done over the past 2 years, presenting us with the facts as facts. And I'd add my voice to theirs as well, if I may. And everything crossed for the coming days.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Noga. Tana Polsky, live from Jerusalem with, I'm sure you will agree, an absolutely exceptional analysis of the situation. And, you know, towards the end, it occurred to me, she's probably saying stuff some people listening to this don't know. How many people literally felt their eyebrows head towards the heavens when she explained how Netanyahu had facilitated the passage of $1 billion to Hamas in order to keep the prospect of a two-state solution even further at bay? Kind of people messaging me to say, well, it's all down to Hamas that the aid hasn't been allowed into Gaza. I think that they're heavily invested in, well, they are heavily invested in this. They think they're well informed. But the levels of ignorance allied to some of the strongest opinions have throughout the last 2 years been absolutely astonishing to me, truly astonishing to me. I've never seen the like of it. Incredibly strong opinions, absolutely no knowledge or understanding of some of the crucial and important detail. And there, Noga just bringing it all to the table, that notion of the attack on Qatar offending Donald Trump on a personal level and providing the grounds on which he would say to Netanyahu, the first time any American president had said to Benjamin Netanyahu, that's it, mate. You're going to sign that deal. Don't anybody mention that it was on the table 18 months ago when Sleepy Joe was president. Let his ego gloss over these uncomfortable details. But the reason why it didn't stick 18 months ago is because Netanyahu didn't think that there would be consequences for his actions. Lo and behold, there is. We will be clipping up that entire conversation with Noga Tana Polsky, because if there's a better analysis of what is going on in Sharm el-Sheikh and Jerusalem and indeed Gaza this morning, then I'm a banana.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Counter-Terror Police Northwest have confirmed that the man who carried out the Manchester synagogue attack made a 999 call in which he pledged allegiance to the so-called Islamic State group. I really, really, really worry about this problem. We need to learn more about how this man was radicalized, but we know the pattern of this. It happens again and again and again and again. The signs are there.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £26 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. Mm-hmm. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply.
With the long, hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just £39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW seasonal inspection. T's and C's apply.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:53, and as a brilliant contribution to this discourse from Andrew Miller, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Israeli-Palestinian Affairs in the US, and it's another example of where Donald Trump's sort of toxic character has actually proved a positive in this context. He says, we did not act like a superpower. And this is speaking on the question of why the deal that was put together 18 months ago under Joe Biden's administration didn't work when it was, as Noga just explained, in many ways very, very similar, if not identical, to what is now set to be signed, what has been signed. We did not act like a superpower, he said. Instead of beginning from the proposition that these were problems we could solve, we persuaded ourselves that there was little we could do to move our regional ally, Israel. Patrick Wintour, the diplomatic editor of The Guardian, writes today, Trump did not have that inferiority complex. He used his unpredictability as his greatest diplomatic weapon. But like Biden, his envoy Steve Witkoff became bogged down in finding a formula that guaranteed the release of all hostages without Israel resuming fighting as it did in March. And what we now know is that the attack upon Qatar, where the United States have an Air Force base, is probably the thing that prompted Trump to become the president who would actually find a way. Well, it was never difficult to persuade Israel to stop. You just had to make it clear that you would no longer support them. Joe Biden couldn't do that. People forget how frequently Joe Biden would state, I am a Zionist. Kamala Harris has complained. In fact, she said, I pleaded with Joe when he spoke publicly on this issue to extend the same empathy he showed to the suffering of Ukrainians to the suffering of innocent Gazan civilians. But he couldn't do it. While he could passionately state, I am a Zionist, his remarks about innocent Palestinians came off as inadequate and forced. And, of course, that loyalty under Kamala Harris's analysis was never repaid by Netanyahu. So Biden's loyalty to Netanyahu was never repaid because Netanyahu wanted Trump in the White House. Because he thought that would actually be to his benefit. And listen, I am going to repeat it again and again and again. Trump is a disgusting and profoundly dangerous human being. But this is stopped clock territory. This is stopped clock twice a day territory. You kind of needed the biggest bully of them all, or the biggest coward of them all, to be in place to push the other bullies and cowards into position, whether the Hamas bullies and cowards or whether the coward and bully Benjamin Netanyahu. And please God it holds. I mean, this is not necessarily the safest foundations upon which to build a peace process or a ceasefire, but they are probably the only foundations available. And I think there's a strong case for arguing they were only available to Trump because of his toxic set of skills, if you want to call them skills. Incredible. Incredible. As I say, the more moving parts we identify, the more remarkable this moment becomes. And listen, just between you and me, wasn't there something really special about Noka's undiluted happiness and joy? That's what I needed. And I said to you this morning, I said, how are you going to dial up my optimism? There it is. Should have got Noga on. Like I said, we should have got her on at 10. It has spared you my own pontifications and ramblings. And if she, someone whose understanding of the bigger picture is absolutely brilliant, if she is demonstrating pure happiness and optimism, then that is good enough for me. Robert's in Oxford. Robert, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. It's amazing I got onto the most important subject the last 2 years. Most. I think we have to, in answer to your question, how we have to react, we have to behave like it is the best story, the best possible outcome. We celebrate, we put flags out, we show that we are, that the whole world, imagine if you could bottle the amount of happiness and optimism around the world today, what you'd have. Yes. So we have to show that we have that optimism and the belief that it's going to happen, because then if there's another strike, if they do something bad, it'll be so exacerbated, it'll contrast the happiness so much that I think it'll collapse on itself, that they won't be able to do it anymore. So if we hold back and just think, maybe let's wait and see what happens, it's going to be the same, or it can't be. We have to...
The stakes would be too high, so the emotions almost become a
overwhelming.
Hostage. Yeah, I love that idea.
Yeah, and honestly, the way I felt when I woke up this morning, as millions would have done, like a massive weight that we didn't know was on our shoulders, that we've been living with every day, not on our minds constantly, but just at the back, you know, in the background, it's always there. The newspapers have stopped writing about it because it's daily. You know, it's not a big news. It's just that constant drip.
Well, it comes and goes. They've been writing about it a lot lately. The Guardian did an extraordinary piece yesterday and today, counting and naming the children that have died in the conflict, with the caveat that they can't get the totals right because thousands will be still lying under the rubble. But I like your analysis, which is that the enthusiasm and the greeting of the deal almost becomes part of the deal itself and minimizes the likelihood of any of Israel breaching it in the future, of resuming hostilities after the hostages have been released, which is the big thing, right? That's the big thing.
It absolutely is. And just one tiny thing about your previous caller. I think he didn't explain himself properly, because what he felt wasn't so much that Trump called him by his first name. He called him BB, you know, and it's a little bit...
Donald Trump to observe the niceties of nomenclature. I mean, it's an odd thing to get exercised. But it's a very odd thing to get exercised by when, as Nogatar Napolsky just reminded us, he was in the process of forcing him to read out a humiliating apology to the Qatari royal family at the same time. So what's in a name, Robert, you might say? what's in a name? I like that. And I didn't think this was going to happen. I didn't think when I said at 10 o'clock this morning, I want to end the hour a lot more upbeat and optimistic than I began it. But you've heard it. You've heard the program. You've heard my voice change in the course of the conversation, partly through people calling in and partly through hitting that line with Noga in Jerusalem. And wouldn't it be funny? I don't know if you can talk about things being funny when I've just mentioned 18,000 dead children in the same sentence or in the same paragraph. But what if the sensitivity to the attack on Qatar had as much to do with the gift of a £500 million jumbo jet as it did with the fact that there's a US Air Force there, based there. In fact, knowing Donald Trump, it sounded like some sort of psychologist claiming to have insights into Donald Trump's secret thinking, but knowing him by his public behaviour, that could be the smartest move that any world leader has made in a very, very long time. In fact, let's take a moment just to think of, well, let's do it after the news, because it is 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, celebrations are taking place in Gaza and Israel after the first phase of Donald Trump's peace plan was agreed. Israel's government will meet later to formally approve the ceasefire deal with Hamas. An exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian prisoners is set to follow. Noga Tarnopolsky, a journalist based in Jerusalem, has been speaking to James in the last half hour.
The Israeli hostages, the remaining hostages, apparently both those still alive and the dead, should be released. We're hearing different things, but in the 48-hour period between Saturday and Monday, they should all be freed. And the United States and Qatar have offered firm guarantees to Hamas that Israel will not restart the war.
The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says the agreement follows 2 years of the most devastating suffering.
The agreement now to a ceasefire, to the restoration of humanitarian aid and to the release of all the hostages is immensely important and must be implemented as swiftly as possible.
Stay with LBC for the latest developments through the day and follow live on the LBC app. Sir Keir Starmer's urged Narendra Modi to move India away from reliance on fossil fuels. The Prime Minister held face-to-face talks with his Indian counterpart on the second day of his trade mission to Mumbai. India is continuing to import Russian oil and gas in defiance of Western sanctions. Police recorded hate crime in England and Wales has risen for the first time in 3 years. The total increased by 2% to 115,990 cases in the 12 months to March. It excludes the Metropolitan Police because of changes in crime recording in London. More pubs, clubs and restaurants could be allowed to stay open into the early hours. The plans are part of a push to cut red tape that ministers say is holding back the UK's hospitality sector. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 39.9509. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, dry and bright with sunny spells across the south, cloudier further north with some light rain in parts of Northern Ireland. A high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 11 is the time. Do you know that the rules in America are that you can only, if you're a US official, up to and including the president, you can only accept gifts under $480, right? The Boeing aircraft that is being donated by Qatar as an unconditional gift, with any necessary retrofitting costs being borne by the US government, is valued at about $400 million. And Donald Trump is intending to pass it to his own presidential library. That must be the world's smallest room. He must be passing it to his own presidential library when he leaves office. So, I mean, plain sight, eh? Plain sight. When the announcement was made, an unconditional gift. So they literally said, here is a $400 million jumbo jet. And you can have it. It is being kitted out to be the new Air Force One, but it won't be Air Force One when there's a new president in the White House. It'll still be Donald Trump's plane. They've given him a $400 million plane. And I wonder, looking at events today, I wonder how significant that is. They called it a bribe at the time. Some of his critics called it a bribe, but the kind of people minded to criticise Donald Trump for accepting a bribe are now having to process the fact that the bribe might have worked and delivered peace in the Middle East. So you can imagine the phone ringing and Donald Trump saying, who is it? And his aide saying, it's the guys who gave you the plane. And him saying, put them through now. Give me the phone. Hey, what do you want? Could you lean on Netanyahu and tell him that if he starts bombing again after the hostages have been released, then he'll have you to deal with? You'll be his enemy? And that is actually what appears to have happened. So I don't know. The grown-ups in the room, when they try and analyse why the attack on Qatar was so significant in this process, why it changed everything and magnetised the peace agreement put together by Joe Biden's administration, it magnetised it in a way that the pens of the Hamas leaders and the Israeli negotiators were drawn inexorably towards the dotted line. They had no choice but to sign. All of the clever money says that the Qatar attack was crucial. The grown-ups will point to the US Air Force base in the region with a side order of Donald Trump's narcissism. Like, how dare you attack a place where I have an Air Force base? The children in the room, let's be honest, that's me and possibly you. The children in the room think it's probably just as likely to have been the gift of an enormous jumbo jet. So we need. We can bring pressure to bear on Hamas. That Arab conglomerate that Noga described, I mean, that is close to unprecedented, having all of those shoulders to that particular wheel. The Saudis, the Qataris, the UAE, the Jordanians, everybody sort of putting pressure on Qatar to change its approach to Hamas. And then, of course, crucially, you need Donald Trump to apply similar pressure to Israel. And the question of why he chose to do it is unlikely to have anything to do with particular concern for bloodshed or hostages. You know, even after his great supporter, Charlie Kirk, was murdered, you remember when a journalist asked him how he felt about it, how he was dealing with it in the immediate aftermath, he said, like, three words and then tried to draw attention to a delivery of slabs happening on the other side of the field he was in. And it's unlikely Donald Trump lies awake at night worrying about anybody else. So why would he do this? And the answer seems to be because the attack upon Qatar broke Benjamin Netanyahu's hold over the White House in some way. And why Qatar would be so crucial in that process, while they are also the administration, the regime that gave him... I mean, literally no questions asked. It says unconditional. This is like a sort of, an unconditional gift. An unconditional gift of a $400 million jumbo jet that no other president in the history of the world would ever have contemplated for a moment accepting. Jimmy Carter put the family peanut farm into a blind trust when he was president in order to avoid any perception of... conflict of interest, in order to be absolutely crystal clear that he wasn't doing anything that might benefit his own peanut farm. Where was it? I want to say Kentucky. I don't think it was in Kentucky, but it was definitely a peanut farm. Jimmy Carter put the family peanut farm into a blind trust. Simon Marks reminded us yesterday that when people queried whether or not it was right for a president to make a $2 billion profit from his own policies and legislation, he responded by saying, well, some people made a lot more than that. He's a crook. Plain and simple. And yet, he has, it would appear, provided the magic sauce, the special sauce, the magic ingredient to this process. And yes, I did do in plain sight, deliberately, honestly. That's the power of the pun. So... I think we're going to ask the same question now. I'm not saying bribery is a good thing, Chris. Don't be so po-faced. I'm saying the peace deal is a good thing. And if it's come about through bribery, then the sin of bribery is dwarfed by the positive of a peace deal. I'm going to wipe the board now. If you, Georgia, the peanut farmers in Georgia. Thank you. Because I think the mood has changed in the room. This room. And now I want you to answer the same question is how do you greet this? I mean, the bits we didn't know that Noga has really nailed down for us. Netanyahu has been told in no uncertain... I'm going to start talking myself down from the lofty heights of optimism now, because it's still Donald Trump. But as long as he's got the plane, I reckon the threat will hold. As long as he's got the aeroplane in the back of his mind, then the threat's going to hold, isn't it? They gave me a plane... They're eating the cats. They gave me a plane. They're eating the dogs. And that is why he's saying to Netanyahu, you can't go near, you can't hit Qatar. They gave me a plane. They gave me a jumbo jet. How dare you attack Qatar? Even if you are going after, I don't care who you're going after. I don't care about anything except me. And you gave me a plane. What did they ever give me? Just headaches. Headaches and nightmares and difficulties and trouble. They gave me a jumbo jet. And that guarantee to Hamas, and I mean, God, it's not pretty, is it, to think of some of the people responsible for ordering the October the 7th terror attack, living out the rest of their days in comparative luxury and lifelong immunity in Qatar. It's not pretty. It's horrible in many ways, but peace deals often are. And in fact, peace deals kind of always are, particularly if you're dealing with terrorist organizations or separatist nationalist groups. That's going to be a very, very bitter pill for many, many people to swallow. Not least, of course, supporters of the bloke who said he was going to annihilate them. Or indeed, the families of the people who died during his attempts to annihilate them, which have now apparently been abandoned. But what you have at the heart of all of this is the very simple fact that they have been told, and Netanyahu has been told, that after the hostages have been released, they are categorically not allowed to resume hostilities, as they have done in the past. Something else probably not widely understood by people who rely upon much of the British media for their understanding of these issues. Two things, really. Netanyahu's tacit support for Hamas, financial encouragement of Hamas, designed to keep the two-state solution ever further out of reach. And secondly, the idea that the peace deal, when it came, would hinge upon him not repeating the action of resuming hostilities after the first phase of a ceasefire has been reached. I'm not alone, apparently, in thinking it was the plane. I'm told John Stewart has explored a similar theme, suggesting that he's like a kid receiving make-a-wish gifts, and it's totally the reason that it has all happened. So, 13 minutes after 11 is the time. Where are we now? How hopeful are you now? 0345 6060 973. Knowing the moving parts, thanks to our contributors in the first hour, particularly Noga, some of those moving parts have stopped moving. What I want you to tell me now is how you greet this news. I'd be interested if you like, pro-Israeli perspectives on it as well. As someone who loves Israel, you're probably not someone who loves Netanyahu. Well, you're not necessarily someone who also loves Netanyahu. What do we think of today's announcements from that perspective? Absolutely everybody with a functioning conscience will be delighted by the imminent release of the hostages. Similarly, anybody with a functioning conscience will be reeling from the scale of the carnage inflicted on Gaza, just as they reeled from the carnage inflicted on Israel on October the 7th. But from so we've heard from a lot of neutrals, and we've heard from people who perhaps lean towards the Palestinian cause, from an Israeli, and we've heard from Noga in Jerusalem about how this is being greeted there. She doesn't speak for the entire country, but the glee at the imminent release of the hostages, I think, will be unconfined. What about the next stage? What about a little bit further down the road? How hopeful are we that this one will stick? 0345 6060 973. And actually, why not open that door as well? Where does it leave Benjamin Netanyahu? Where do you think, as a keen Israel watcher, where do you think it leaves Benjamin Netanyahu? Kira suggests that we give the Nobel Peace Prize to Donald Trump, to Qatar, for playing Donald Trump like a violin. I don't know that it quite works like that. 11:15 is the time. Phone lines are free. So if you want to tell me now, as the mood has shifted, if you like, and some of the facts have settled and the momentum has become irresistible and the signatures have been applied, the Israeli government's vote is, I think, a foregone conclusion. How do you greet this peace? 0345 6060 973. It's 11:15.
This is LBC.
Imagine the varifocal lens of the future, personalized to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behavior. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at Essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early Bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead. Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments. And book your flight to St. Martin from £679 flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax.
Elegance is a journey. Air France.
To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 17 minutes after 11. I think we can open Idiot's Corner just very, very briefly on this hopefully and currently momentous day. This is really one of those shows that's worth listening back to, isn't it? Because the change in mood has been magnificent and really rather special, thanks almost entirely to our correspondent in Jerusalem, Nogatana Polsky, and the joy with which she is embracing this moment and the facts with which she has contextualised it are wonderful. Causes for cautious celebration as opposed to cautious optimism. That's the shift in the programme. But Mark's not feeling it. Mark's been in touch. He writes, "You must be gutted that Trump brokered this peace deal." So you've got nearly 70,000 people dead. Nearly about 2,000, of course, murdered on October the 7th. The possibility of peace being achieved in the Middle East. And Mark's first thought is, some bloke on the radio who might be cross that it was brokered by someone he thinks is immoral. That's magnificent, Mark. Seriously, I cannot believe the amount of space I occupy in your head. If even on a day like today, your first thought is me. And I am not remotely gutted that Trump has brokered this peace deal. I don't know that anybody else could have done it. It doesn't change the fact that he's a self-confessed sex offender, a serial felon, an absolutely hideous person who's currently embarked upon a well-trodden course towards dictatorship. All of that's still true, and you still support him because, well, you know, you like it a fascism. But the idea that I'd be gutted because you think I'm like the yin to your twisted yang is a thing of beauty. And what you also forgot is that I have a history button on my texts. So I know you're the guy who wrote, Khan said that Palestine should not be run by a Westerner. Well, maybe London shouldn't be run by a Muslim. So there you go. You hate integration. You hate democracy. And you hate Muslims. And almost inevitably, on another day, why should everyone else prop up families who can't afford to bring up kids? These people shouldn't have kids if they can't afford to care for them. If only someone had cared for you, mate, when you were little, you wouldn't have turned into such a bilious, toxic dump of a human being. Idiot's Corner for you, my friend. 19 after 11 is the time. Your reactions to the growing sense of celebration or optimism, choose between the two, and your grounds for it. Gabriel's in Hackney. Gabriel, what would you like to say?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, you know, I've just been listening to your show this morning. Brilliant analysis on a lot of fronts. And obviously, I think you have to be a complete idiot to not celebrate what's happening right now. I really do. I think, you know, that, you know, everyone deserves a break from this, especially the Palestinian people who have absolutely slaughtered, and the hostages who have been held as well, you know?
Yes.
And one of the things I was saying to your researcher before is one thing, you know, there's one thing about peace in the Middle East, but one thing we cannot lose sight of now for any progress in the future is accountability for what has happened. I am very pro-Palestinian cause.
Okay.
But I think the fact that these Hamas leaders in Qatar are now going to be allowed to live some kind of life while their people have been absolutely decimated, I think it's disgusting.
That was a bit of a gulp moment, wasn't it, when Noga drove that home an hour ago?
Yeah, I think they should face the same consequences as I believe Netanyahu should as well, and his cabinet of criminals. I think that everyone now that has been responsible, and actually including people that have supported this in Europe, should all face some kind of justice for what's happened. And that's the only way that's going to stop extremism and this kind of research, you know, re-emerging in the future. That's the way I kind of see things.
Well,
you know?
I don't. I hadn't thought of this. There's so many questions that are popping up in the course of trying to answer these relatively straightforward ones. But, of course, what does the International Criminal Court do now? I think that the Hamas operatives that they wanted for war crime, the Hamas leader that was wanted for war crimes, alleged war crimes, is actually dead now. So that question doesn't stand. But where does it leave the warrants that are out for Netanyahu and other members of his government? Because I think of the Good Friday Agreement and the fact that it is, in a sense, a slate wiped clean, Gabriel.
Yeah,
and you don't want that. And I understand why. If you're going to give immunity to Hamas leaders in Qatar, living out the rest of their days, then you kind of have to let Netanyahu off the war crimes hook as well. And God, that's not a happy thought, is it? For either group.
Absolutely. And you know, I completely reject the fact that they should have immunity, these Hamas operatives.
Well, then they wouldn't have got the peace deal.
I don't think there's any maybe about it.
That's the whole point, isn't it? You're negotiating with people who have all their skin in the game, and you have to reflect that in order to get their signatures on the dotted line.
Absolutely. I think maybe this is, you know, obviously there's so many dynamics and so many moving parts.
Yeah, there certainly are.
It's hard to pin anything down, but I think maybe not at the moment, but this is something that has to, you know, I think the point I'm trying to make is just, this is just something we cannot lose sight of. It cannot just be, you know, the war is over now, let's just move on. It just cannot be that. A bit like after the Second World War. You know, yes, you know, obviously the Nazis got defeated and so on and so forth, but there was accountability.
Yeah, but there was a military defeat. It wasn't a negotiated settlement.
That is also true.
I think you should look to Ireland, not to Versailles for this. I think, you know, the notion of former enemies not necessarily being friends, but that's what a truce is, isn't it? A truce is a kind of wiping clean of the slate. I hadn't thought about that.
Yes, I mean, neither had I, but I think, again, I mean, obviously Ireland was, you know, but I think in this particular case where now you are looking at potential genocide, I think the size of the issue is much bigger than what was in Ireland, even though Ireland was also horrible.
That's a given. No, that's true. So the people in Gaza are from reports, and of course Israel still won't let journalists in. From foreign news organisations, because they're terrified of the world finding out what's been going on there for generations, let alone the last 2 years. But the people in Gaza will be celebrating because their likelihood of living has increased exponentially this morning. But goodness knows when the dust settles what they would consider to be justice for those who are no longer living.
Absolutely. And you also have to think of the psychological damage these poor kids and these people have now going to endure, I mean, for generations, probably generations. So, you know, I think, yes, I agree in a peace deal. Yes, I agree in some form of amnesty for some people. But Netanyahu cannot, you know, maybe for the moment, just to let the dust settle. But in a year, in 10 years, whenever, people have to be held accountable. Because if they're not, there will be another Hamas in another form from another place. And it will just make the world a more dangerous place. So until there's that accountability, and you know, you can see that this, you know, the word "never again," the phrase "never again" has to be "never again." And if you don't have accountability for criminals, there will be another.
All right,
another
you've opened
like
up a whole new avenue of contemplation, actually, because I mean, reading it at the moment, between the lines, mostly the proposal seems to be a sort of. If Qatar are living in, if Hamas leaders are living in Qatar with lifelong immunity from prosecution or pursuit, you know, within a month of Netanyahu trying to kill them in Qatar, then I don't really see how Netanyahu can be expected to face the music for what the Israeli regime has done in Gaza. And listen, I'm probably going to change my tone slightly. My optimism and joy at the potential ceasefire remains undiminished and remains a lot higher than it was at 10 o'clock this morning, because that's what understanding can do. It can change how you feel about things. But that point Gabriel makes is big, isn't it? It's a really big intervention. 0345 60 60973 is the number you need. I mean, I'm canvassing immediate responses now, or at least slightly more considered responses than perhaps either of us had at 10 o'clock today. How do you greet this news? 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. And I'm also drawn to the question of hope, to the question of why we are so hopeful that Trump's threat to Netanyahu will work. And what would that, do we even know what that would look like? So Hamas have been assured that after all the hostages have been released, and please God they will be, then there is no way that Netanyahu will resume hostilities in Gaza, which is what has happened in the past. And the reason why Hamas are signing this is because they have believed that. Is it too soon for us to speculate on what that threat looks like? What would Trump do in the event of Netanyahu breaking his side of the deal? I don't know. What would they bring to bear? What would they use as leverage, as sanction in that kind of context? I honestly don't know. I'm not sure anybody does, but they mustn't they? The people sitting around the negotiating table, you're not just going to say Donald promises that if Netanyahu starts killing people again, then he will be in big trouble. You're going to say, well, what does big trouble look like? And Donald Trump's going to say, well, you're the guys that gave me the plane. Do you think Benjamin Netanyahu is wishing that he'd given Donald Trump a plane this morning? It's not impossible, you know. Why didn't we give him a plane? We could have given him a plane. Have we got a plane? But that there, I wonder who can answer that question, actually. What would that look like? What would that threat be? You say to Qatar, sign here, and we'll give you some lifelong deal, which a lot of people are going to find quite distasteful. I do find it distasteful. I also find it distasteful if it is the case that Netanyahu won't be held to account for his alleged war crimes. But you can't approve of one being held to account and not the others in this kind of scenario. But if they've been persuaded to sign because of this promise, what does that promise look like? Is that a silly question at this stage? Because I think it's probably, although some of the questions I asked Noga felt a bit silly before she answered them, and it turned out that the facts were available, the detail was there. If you were on the ground in Jerusalem and processing this stuff through filters that are uncorrupted by the biases of British media, what would that look like when you're sitting there saying, I'm not signing this, it's not worth the paper it's printed on, I've signed a bunch of deals, I've signed loads of ceasefires, and they started killing us again afterwards. Hamas had broken ceasefires as well. October the 7th was a breach of a ceasefire. Why would anybody sign? Well, Hamas have been told by the coalition, if you like, of Arab nations, the like of which has never really been seen before in this space, that they're out of the game now. That's it. It's over. You're getting nothing. All the taps have been turned off. So they've had little choice but to go. But the final push would involve them believing that when they've released the hostages, the killing won't start again. And what would that look like? If Netanyahu did start again, what is the thing that he has been threatened with or they have been persuaded would happen to ensure that the withdrawal of all military aid to Israel? I honestly don't know. I'm just now beginning to process and therefore marvel at the sheer scale of what that threat must have looked like. I wonder whether a $400 million jumbo jet has ever bought quite so much as it appears to have bought in this space. It's coming up to 11:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Tell me how you feel about this as somebody with an investment in the region, either in among the Palestinian people or among the Israeli people. I presume there's celebration, but I am also interested in reservation. And you can tell me yours on 03456060973. It's 11:30. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Members of Israel's government will meet this afternoon to discuss and vote on a ceasefire plan for Gaza. The deal, including a ceasefire and hostage prisoner exchange, was agreed by Israel and Hamas talks in Egypt overnight. Israeli troops could begin their withdrawal from Gaza within 24 hours. Sir Keir Starmer says it's a moment of profound relief. And the Prime Minister's urged his Indian counterpart to move his country away from reliance on fossil fuels. Sir Keir and Narendra Modi have been holding talks as part of a UK trade mission to Mumbai. LBC weather, dry and bright with sunny spells in the south, cloudier further north, a high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Max saving £20. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:32 is the time, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. This is rather lovely from Max. Hi, James. I'm a pro-Israel, anti-Netanyahu British Jew. I am a Zionist. I lost friends on October the 7th, and I've had family hiding in bomb shelters for 2 years. I slept the best I have in years going to bed with the news, and I woke up with a weight on off my shoulders I didn't realise I was carrying. I'm incredibly optimistic, and I hope this is the beginning of the path to peace between two states and two peoples, both of whom have a right to live there in peace. Let's keep the optimism flowing. We'll try, Max, we'll try. Thanks to this as well. I don't read out many of these messages, but I read out the odd one from Matt in Swansea. I know you don't like Trump, and I understand why, but your show this morning has been excellent, and your analysis spot on. You're a true professional. Let's not get carried away, Matt. And you've proved it this morning. I don't find it hard. That's why I read out that message from Chummo in Idiot's Corner a minute ago. I don't find it hard. And I don't think most people do. It's why I'm fascinated by footballification. Somebody from the other team, and in this case, you know, the other team is the one that's comfortable with self-confessed sex offenders and serial felons and hideous human beings, because I generally, the reason always turns out to be you really like other racism. But if someone from the other team does something that's objectively good, it's really not difficult to say so. You know? It would be a bit like being so Islamophobic that you couldn't praise Sadiq Khan for doing something. It would be ridiculous, except, of course, Islamophobic is hatred. Whereas finding Donald Trump disgusting is a position of ineluctable logic. He just is. It's not an opinion, it's counting. But I don't find it difficult. It's not a mark of professionalism. Well, maybe it is in the modern world. But hey-ho, on we go. 11:34 is the time. There's room for you to get involved if you want to. I like Max's message, that idea. But I don't know. Maybe it is too soon to start wondering about what happens next to Benjamin Netanyahu in this case. We know what's going to happen to Hamas leaders. They're going to live out the rest of their lives in relative luxury in Qatar with impunity and a sort of NATO-style agreement that America have brokered. That's not going to go down well in some parts of Washington, is it? The idea that the leaders, the remaining architects of the October the 7th terror attack come out of this relatively unscathed? I don't know. Joey's in Stansted. Joey, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I think you and me largely share the same impression of and the same position towards Trump. So it's going to take a lot of mental gymnastics for me to say this. But in response to the point that you made in your opening monologue about in plain sight and him being a crook, I almost feel like I have more time and a little bit of respect for this self-serving narcissist that is Trump for accepting a bribe and being corrupt openly than a lot of our politicians in this country who still want to be the good guy, still want to act like they're doing their jobs for public interest while accepting renovations on their apartment, while accepting money for peerages, while accepting new wardrobes. But no, they're the good guys who are working for the public interest. So it pains me to say this, but let's focus on the outcome here. And if Trump gets a jumbo jet,
this is an extraordinary, man alive, we're moving quickly, aren't we? But you describe a sort of pragmatism, I suppose, don't you? But I mean, I don't think I'm ready to join you on the side of saying I'd rather have open and unbounded corruption in power than some of the sort of pound shop versions that you describe. And I also, you're going to hate me for this one, Joey, I don't think it's fair to lump Starmer in on that with accepting clothes from Wahid Ali, because it is a kind of a bit like being in the public eye and needing a clothing allowance, which I think even the tax man allows. But if that's how it's reached you, the same as Boris Johnson lying about who'd paid for his flat to be refurbished, then that's fair enough.
I agree with you about it being a sliding scale and like there are shades of corruption, right? Like I'm totally with you about that. But I guess it's coming from this extremely cynical, jaded point of view of I can't name one single serving politician who actually acts from a place of serving the public first.
Oh,
so
dear.
If Donald Trump's going to be that narcissist who says, I'm in it for me, I'm in it for potentially a Nobel Peace Prize or a jumbo jet, I don't know, James. I sort of feel like,
You're charming and you're lovely and you've showed your working, as my old maths teacher used to say, quite beautifully. And I salute your honesty, but I can't join you on this one. Except to say, it's possible that only a disgusting narcissist could have delivered this particular deal in this particular space at this particular time. You needed to be someone susceptible to bribery, obsessed with self-aggrandizement and baubles and awards, and motivated entirely by self-interest. The line that fits your analysis is the line about Biden and what Kamala Harris says about Joe Biden not being rewarded for his loyalty to Netanyahu. She said he could passionately state, I am a Zionist, but his remarks about innocent Palestinians came off as inadequate and forced. He's trying to inhabit the world of diplomacy and decency. And anybody inhabiting a world of diplomacy and decency couldn't have pushed these two bullying regimes or administrations or whatever you prefer to call them into the place to which they have been pushed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if this position of, you know, how do I benefit from it does deliver peace, I do share your skepticism.
No, and he couldn't do it in Ukraine because no. Vladimir Putin doesn't depend upon American support for his, if not quite his very existence, then certainly for his military capabilities.
I mean, look, I'll try to contribute with a little bit of hopefulness to say if Donald Trump can find something to leverage and something that benefit him and it does deliver peace in Ukraine and, you know, I'm all for it. It's just, yeah, I guess.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. I, for the simple reason that I don't think that even if Volodymyr Zelensky could afford to give him a jumbo jet, he would never have enough influence over Vladimir Putin to make this end. And what is clear, despite Benjamin Netanyahu's attempts to run some sort of victory lap without having achieved any of the things that he swore he would do. Well, no, to be fair, the remaining hostages seem set to be released, but the annihilation of Hamas, which has been his justification for what is now, of course, considered to be a genocide by much wiser heads than ours, has not happened. He's still trying to do a lap of honour. What is clear is that his hand was forced. From the moment, we probably should have paid more attention to him being forced to read out that apology to the Qatari government, to the Qatari regime, royal family, whoever it was that he had to, I sound like him now, whoever it was that I had to apologise to. That was probably the moment. But again, you can't. You're doing it again. You're doing Kremlin. I'm doing it again. I'm talking about Donald Trump as if he's normal. As if what he says on a Monday will still be true on a Tuesday. Or what he says on a Wednesday will still be true on a Thursday. It just is not the case. And that, of course, is the major grounds for caution in this space. But the amount of other shoulders to this particular wheel suggests that I don't know that a reversal, a retreat would be possible. Joey, thank you. I love that. I love that. Reasoned, measured analysis of why corruption and bribery can sometimes be good. And if you're going to have corruption and bribery, then wouldn't you rather have it all out in the open than going on behind closed doors and unfolding in secret? Ha. Amro is in Bridgend. Amro, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Sorry, first time caller, so just bear with me.
Of course. You're very welcome.
And before I forget my point, so I want to talk about three timescales, really, today, tomorrow, and the future. You already, your sounds and your spirit, you're already delighted about the deal. And it is fantastic to stop the war. It's good for everyone. It's good for Palestinians, for Israelis, for the hostages, for the kids. And everyone would be happy with that. You know, like in the Middle East, over here, everyone would be delighted about that. Gabriel, your caller about accountability. It was.
This is going to be the next big conversation, isn't it?
It is, and I feel there is another dimension to it, which is the future as well. But I think accountability is important because never again it won't happen without really reflecting on what happened. and making people accountable. This is the only way we can move forward.
It's not though. Sometimes the only way you can move forward from a position that has long appeared intractable is by offering the opposite of accountability to the key players. You offer them immunity. I mean, it's happened most obviously in Ireland recently, in terms of this country's most obvious parallels. You don't offer accountability, you offer immunity.
So I grew up in the Middle East, and yeah. We all the time have peace deals with, and it end up with another, you know, there's no permanent peace deal so far. And I think, you know, accountability can't resolve the issues, really. And it's not about, you know, I know it's, you know, genocide issue is still hanging around. We, you know, and few people are accountable from both sides.
Yes.
But I think the only way to resolve the issues in the future is people to sit down and talk and, you know.
That prospect has grown, hasn't it? It's early days, but I think increasingly, as we talk about this, the relative humiliation for Netanyahu becomes clearer. The idea that he has been forced into this, not only in the current moment, but also in the future, told in no uncertain terms that this time you're not allowed to breach the ceasefire, you're not allowed to start killing again, you're not allowed to keep people like Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir sweet by embracing the sort of greater Israel rhetoric. I don't know what future administrations might look like, but I don't know how those talks would progress, but surely if Hamas have been removed from the picture and Netanyahu has been told to wind his neck in, their shared sworn enemy, a two-state solution, grows in possibility.
I'm hoping that, you know, it will settle down, but as I mentioned, you know, I've seen it coming back again.
It might
come down for another 5-10 years. It will come back again. There are Palestinian refugees everywhere in the Middle East. They can go back, and they will, you know, I don't think any deal will accommodate them as such. But we are moving forward, I think, and, you know, and I think the best thing for them, and that's my opinion, you know, Arabs, they might not like that, but to settle them where they are at the moment and move forward.
Yes, but, yeah, I mean, that is the point, isn't it? Is that this is only a celebration if it sets the tone for a future, and I think the confidence that it will do so is relatively quite high at the moment, but time will tell, I suppose. It is 11:45. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thank you, Amro. One of your all-time favourite callers, I notice, is on the switchboard and up next. I wonder if you can work out who it is.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A moment of high drama as President Trump took to his social media platform, Truth Social, to confirm Israel and Hamas had signed off on the first phase of his peace plan.
What is it about Donald Trump, by the way? He's like a bully. When you recall how he was with Zelensky in his White House office, appalling behaviour. He can be abusive about journalists as well. And yet, at the next breath, he might have pulled off one of the most significant peace deals in recent years. What is it about the man? And if, as many of you do, you have TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome, it's going to be a tough day for you today, isn't it?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe it's time for varifocals.
At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £26 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 11:48 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's nice, this. It's when it sort of all feels a little bit family. I hope that Balama is your next caller, James, writes Afis. A few other people picking up on that. Is it the lawyer guy? I can't remember his name, but I was just thinking how much I would like to hear his thoughts. I was just thinking about him today and wondering what he might think. It's Balama in Lambeth, isn't it, James, says Matt, and this from Parvez. I hope it's Balama, and it is indeed. Balama Bugatti joins us on the line from Lambeth. There you go, you've got your own little fan club, Balama. I bet you didn't know that, did you?
No, you are incredibly kind, James, and you have sent my brain empty now.
No. Well, let me just refresh. let me refresh the conversation. We're of course responding to this announcement this morning that a piece appears to be in place, or at least imminent, in Gaza and Israel. Celebrations on the ground in both places as we speak. The first phase of what will be fairly known as Trump's plan is underway. Balama, if you don't know, is a lawyer and a public intellectual is how Wikipedia have decided to describe you. But you also work in de-radicalization and all sorts of areas of international relations and diplomacy, formerly at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. And you have never let us down yet, Balama, so no pressure. What are your initial reactions, your initial thoughts about today's developments?
No, James, I think I first called you about 2 years ago. Maybe today will be the exact date, or yesterday, yesterday.
Yes.
And when all of this started, we all agreed that there is no way to pierce through bombing and bullets. You cannot bomb your way or shoot your way to peace. And we pointed out what was going to be a devastation or devastating results in Gaza if Netanyahu went ahead with an all-out war. Unfortunately, it took them 2 years to recognize that. But it has happened. Today they are on the table. And the hostages he wanted to release, according to him, and potentially Israel's security, is now being achieved through peace rather than through war, which is something he pursued for the past 2 years. Now, I am cautiously optimistic when it comes to these today's announcement. Cautious because there are certain steps that need to be taken. The first thing you do to take away the ability of violent extremist groups like Hamas to recruit people is to take away their grievance. And that's because all of these groups find grievances, whether genuine or perceived grievances, and that is what they use to drive young people, recruit them, radicalize them, and send them to violence. And the way you take away Hamas's grievances is to recognize a Palestinian state and to rebuild Gaza. Netanyahu says it's a reward for Hamas in one breath to recognize a Palestinian state, and in another breath he says Hamas doesn't want a Palestinian state. They don't believe in the two-state solution. And so it cannot be a reward to them for you to recognize a Palestinian state and to rebuild Gaza, because as long as this situation continues, Hamas or a group like Hamas will arise in the future and will convince young people that there is no way to independence and to self-determination through peace or through non-violence. You have to go through the violent way. And therefore, the best way to stop them, to take the cell out of their boat or to take the gas out of their whatever, is to recognize a Palestinian state and then go ahead to rebuild Gaza.
Well,
are doing that.
Almost everybody has recognized the Palestinian state now.
Yeah, except the most States. Important actor, the United States of America, which is also continuing to veto the United Nations deliberations on that. And I think if Trump will now go ahead to recognize that, unfortunately, Netanyahu continues to say, I am going to fight it tooth and nail until the very last, but hopefully he doesn't succeed. While you do that, you now then have to engage in an aggressive, sustained campaign of trauma healing. Yes. And this is on both sides of the border. Transgenerational trauma can shape generations of individuals, even including those who have not been born now. And we know that individuals and communities have been traumatized both in Israel and in Gaza, and you need to undertake an aggressive, sustained, well-developed work or program of communal healing, individual healing, to make sure that next generations of individuals from both sides do not continue with the transgenerational trauma. And as you do that, then de-radicalization work has to start. From Hamas's attack and from Israel's response, you know that both the Israeli and the Gaza side or the Hamas side of the border have dehumanized each other. And you cannot live in peace if you don't see your neighbor as a human being who has aspirations and dreams and has a right to live just like you. People say Gaza children are being radicalized in their schools and all that. But if you looked at how Israel responded, and it's not just Netanyahu, it's the Israeli army, it's the Israeli politicians, their statements, their actions, you know that they also are radicalized, whether through their schools or whatever means, they are also radicalized, and you need to then de-radicalize both sides of the border. And to do that, you have to first take away the grievance, work on the trauma, and give people some sense of security and peace, and then you go ahead to continue to work towards de-radicalization.
Where do you derive your hope that that's possible, Balama? Because for people that don't know, you work in this field most, obviously, I think, with Boko Haram, former terrorists in Africa. So you know it can work. But on this kind of scale?
It can work. I have not tried it on this kind of scale, but over the past 3 years or so, I have worked directly to de-radicalize over 290 former ISIS fighters in East Africa, in Congo and in Uganda. And James, when you come into contact with individuals who have been radicalized, you will start to understand that this is a process. No one is born an extremist. No one is born to hate. People are taught to hate and to become violent and to get radicalized. And if it is possible teach people to hate, we can also teach them to love. But it's possible. But like I said, you have to treat people as human beings. You have to give them a sense of security, because this is a mental thing. It is a mental journey that first needs some physical security in terms of. So I'll give you mundane examples, James. So for example, in our de-radicalization center in Kampala, the first thing that has become the icebreaker for us over the past few years that establish its trust quickly is to give people very good medical treatment and give them food, because they are very hungry, coming from the bush, and they just want someone to see them as a human being and treat them as human beings, and then they will start to open up. And it's a long journey, and it's difficult, but it's worth it, and it's possible if the right conditions are put in place. The first condition for Gaza is rebuild the Gaza, recognizing them as a state like Israel, and then you can take it from there.
And well, even earlier than that, I guess the 400 trucks a day of aid and the rebuilding of the medical infrastructure and hospitals in Gaza will be an absolutely essential part of any process that bears any relationship whatsoever to what you describe. I love the way that I had a guest earlier this week, I don't know if you heard it, who lost his parents on October the 7th, Magan Inon. And him and his brothers and sisters have dedicated themselves to precisely the sort of work that you describe. It needs leadership, doesn't it? And it probably needs leadership from people whose experiences could have actually led them towards radicalization. The best people to show the way, the path away from it, are the people who haven't succumbed to its siren lure.
Exactly, James. There are people who would have been candidates for radicalization and would have seen radicalization in their communities. I mean, that's how I started this work. When Boko Haram started in my community, I saw my friends, my neighbors, some of them joined the group, and I saw how the group uses, Islamic scripture misinterpreted and misapplied in a context that shouldn't be applied, and how then they used those interpretations to whip up people's anger and desire for change, and then present then violence as the only way to change to them. And therefore, getting people who should have been radicalized and working with them, people who have worked elsewhere in the world, even places like Northern Ireland, there could be things that could be learned in Gaza. But you need the peace. You need people to rebuild in the hospitals, like you said, the economy of Gaza, so that people may start to live in some sense of security and peace, and then you can take it from there. And to be honest, the only way to get the Palestinians or the extremist elements amongst the Palestinians to recognize a Palestinian state an Israeli state is first for you to give them their own state. So they have their state, you can now convince them to recognize their neighbors on. But if you have denied them that right for years and you want them to recognize the other party's state, then that's a very, very difficult thing to do.
Sometimes the stuff that seems obvious ends up being the hardest to achieve, but it never stops being obvious, does it? It never stops being clear. And you're right, you did point this out. We've spoken to a few people this week who have been proved right by events of the last 2 years, and the sadness in their voices, they acknowledge that fact, is unmistakable. Balama, thank you. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. How is the memoir coming along?
It's coming together very well.
Are you sure? Because when people ask, when I've got a book on the go and people ask me that question, my heart sinks.
No, I think I am enjoying the writing process, and hopefully it will be out sometime next year, towards the end of next year, but it's coming together.
You must come into the studio and talk to us about it when publication day looms.
No, anytime. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Balama. If you want to find out more about Balama's work, his full name is Aldo Balama Bukati, and he is a phrase I don't often use, but he is a great friend of this program. It's 12 noon now, and we're going to do Mystery Hour next. Goodness knows, we've earned a little bit of light relief, I think, in the last days. And of course, because of the hideous events in Manchester, we didn't have one last week. So back once again after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Israel's government is expected to meet this afternoon to vote on a ceasefire deal with Hamas. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, says a ceasefire will only begin after the agreement, struck at talks in Egypt, is ratified. It includes a partial withdrawal of Israeli troops before a hostage-prisoner exchange. Journalist Mark Shulman's been speaking to LBC from Hostage Square in Tel Aviv.
For the first time today, For the first time in 2 years, people are saying Boker Tov, a good morning, and they actually mean it. The first time walking around Tel Aviv, all you see is faces smiling, not faces that are angry or upset or everything else you can imagine. Smiling faces throughout Tel Aviv today, that is what we're seeing.
Sir Keir Starmer says it's a moment of profound relief. Cabinet Minister Pat McFadden says he is hopeful the ceasefire will pave the way to lasting peace.
I think for the first time in many years, we have the prospect of a more stable future for the Middle East with a plan that's backed internationally, including by the UK government, to get a proper long-term future in place and not just a ceasefire. And that's the most exciting prospect of all.
Madeleine McCann's sister has started giving evidence to the trial of two women accused of stalking the family, 24-year-old Julia Wandelt and Karen Spragg, who is 61. Both deny the charges against them. LBC's George Icke is following the trial at Leicester Crown Court.
Amelie McCann said messages from a woman who's accused of stalking her family were creepy and disturbing, and that Julia Wandelt was playing with Amelie's emotions by claiming to be missing Madeleine. Amelie McCann's told the trial that she blocked Julia Wandelt on TikTok because she was being made to feel uncomfortable. She explained that TikTok showed her how often Wandelt was viewing her profile, and it was so regularly that she had to take action.
Customers of five water companies are facing higher than expected increases to their bills. Anglian, Northumbrian, Southern, Wessex and South East argued they wouldn't be able to meet their regulatory obligations. Households will see their costs rise by up to 5% more than previously agreed. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down 39 points at 95.09. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, most places dry and bright across the south this afternoon, but cloudier further north with some light and patchy rain in parts of Northern Ireland. A high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. I'm going to solve a mystery for you in the course of this hour. I received a lot of communications in the last couple of weeks about whether or not you've been blocked or somehow your messages to me are not being reached because you no longer see the ticks on your WhatsApp message. I'm going to solve that mystery for you today. But of course, that is not the main purpose of this part of the programme. It is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. The way it works is thusly. You ring in with a question, a mystery, a riddle, a conundrum, and someone else will ring in with the answer. It is actually as simple as that. The magic happens in the margins. It may not sound like something that allows me to guarantee a laugh-out-loud moment or some genuine enlightenment or indeed to promise that you will know more by 1 o'clock than you do now. But I can do all of those things. I can guarantee the laughter, the knowledge, the enlightenment, because we haven't failed yet. You can even win a game. There's a prize. It's the only hour of the week on LBC where there is a prize every single week. Every Thursday from 12, the Mystery Hour ball game is up for grabs for whoever makes my favourite contribution of the day. And that, I'm afraid, management's decision is final. You can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. If you want to find out more about the Mystery Hour board game, soon to be a collector's item because it is to move into phase two, hopefully in time for the Christmas market, a rather nifty new pocket-sized edition that will be in shops soon. But I urge you to go to mysteryhour.co.uk to keep up to date with all of those developments. I knew that was going to touch a lot of nerves, that business about the ticks on the WhatsApp. I'll fill you in on what is going on shortly, but you're obviously aware that you haven't been blocked because you know that I've now read your message asking if you have been blocked. But I want to get Mystery Hour proper up and running first. Have I done the full terms and conditions, Adam? Did I say full? Yes, good. Do you know why? Because I'm a professional. That's how I roll. Given that we were exploring pretty heavy territory in the last hour, then it sometimes means that people aren't jumping in to the into the Mystery Hour pool immediately when 12 noon comes around. So there are currently two phone lines free on the board for whatever mystery it is that you need solving. And the number you need to submit a mystery or indeed to ring in with an answer is 0345 6060973. It's always the same number. I like that. I've had to pull over and stop the car to listen to Balama and some of your calls this morning. I can't stop crying at the hope of peace. That's a lovely thought with which to move into much, much lighter territory and much less choppy waters. 7 after 12 is the time. Should we crack on? Should we just get going? Or do you need any more from me? Do you understand it? If you're new to it? If you're new to it, wow. There are hundreds of them there's an archive. Some people download tons of these for the family trips on holiday. It's perfect family listening. Hello, guys, if you're on a family holiday trip at the moment at some distant point in the future, welcome back to 2025. No, I'll just get on with it then. David is in Grange Hill. Question of art. How many jokes? And you've heard them all, haven't you, David? You've heard them all.
Indeed.
Where's Gripper?
I have a question.
Go on, then.
I have a question for you. I have an unhealthy obsession with acorns that started about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
My wife and I, we bought this little King Charles Spaniel, and we had him a couple of weeks.
Right.
And we saw him wandering around on the lawn, almost staggering as if he was drunk. We took him to the vets, and the vet said it looked like he'd been poisoned.
Oh.
And we didn't know what was wrong. So I come home and I looked around in the garden. I realised he'd been nibbling acorns. So at vast expense, I put up a green security fence so it blended in with the greenery at the end of the garden so it wasn't obvious. Yeah. And the following year, no acorns fell.
What? How does a fence stop acorns from falling?
It doesn't. The trees don't drop them. And then the following year, few fell.
Why didn't the trees drop the acorns?
Correct. That's one of the questions I had.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were still doing context. No. I thought we were still setting the scene, David.
Well,
setting...
We are.
Go on.
The following year, none fell.
Right.
However, this year, the acorns started falling in July.
Yeah.
And this week, I've been out and I've filled 3/4 of my wheelie bin full of acorns.
That's a lot of acorns.
It is a lot of acorns. There's a lot of acorns around. So my question is, it's a sort of a multi-part question. How do all of the trees know when to start dropping their acorns and how many to drop? Because they all started in July this year, which is very early. Some years they dropped none, and this year they dropped they're still dropping an absolute huge amount.
Well,
so how do they all know to do it at the same time?
I need to work on this question a bit, mate. Because I mean, obviously, trees don't know things. They're dropping at the same time for the same reason, aren't they? It's the sort of combination of environmental and meteorological factors mean that it's a seasonal thing. So that's why. So what we really want to know is why are there loads of acorns some years and none at all other years?
Yeah, correct. And also, there's different volumes of acorns when they do drop them. I understand if it's a seasonal thing, 365 days. It's like a cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the leaves.
No. That's what I mean. Yes. Yeah, so some years there's loads, and some years. What role does the green security fence that you installed at great expense play in this question?
It stops the dog getting to the acorns at the end of the garden.
Yeah. So it plays no role at all.
It stops the dog from getting delirious and nearly dying.
Yeah, but in terms of acorns falling out of trees, the tree... Because I thought you were linking the fence to the acorns, like as if putting the fence up changes the acorn production quotient.
No, I've got an unhealthy obsession with acorns. When I keep going to my wife, why do they keep dropping at different times? Why do we get... Now, she says to me, why don't you ring in and ask James O'Brien on Mystery Hour?
This is it, you see. This is the scope and the reach that we've achieved over the years. You're boring your wife rigid and she thinks of me immediately. That's lovely.
Just to say, I've never done this and she's away on holiday at the moment,
which is
what you mentioned on your lead-in, and she'll be listening on catch-up.
What's her name?
I'll be the first
culprit,
Sue.
Oh, Sue. All right, Sue. Nice. I'm speaking to you from the past, Sue, but hopefully by the time this... reaches you will have solved the mystery of David's acorns.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. I've never really clocked that, but you are right. I know that every time someone asks a question related to acorns, which is surprisingly often recently, I point out that in the New Forest, that's what the pigs are for. They release the pigs. Release the pigs every year in the New Forest to eat all the acorns because they're poisonous or dangerous for horses. And we've learnt now for King Charles Spaniels. You live and learn. So why? Why is the acorn crop so inconsistent? 0345 6060973. Quick shout out to Kidderminster. I've got a new listener there. Nigel, I don't take questions by text. And it's a timely reminder, actually, that you didn't know that, because there'll be lots of other new listeners who don't realise that I don't take questions by text or email or WhatsApp. We keep it all on air. So, acorns, up and running. Nina is on the Isle of Sheppey. Nina, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
So, I want to know, if you take, for instance, in the morning, you take, like, a multivitamin,
yeah,
and then, like, you've got a bit of a headache and you take a paracetamol, maybe you've got hay fever and you're taking antihistamine, how does your body know where to distribute what?
Well, I mean... anti-inflammatories, they operate on the bits that are inflamed. So, you know, with a headache or something like that, it's, I don't know. I don't know why I even started going down. I sounded so confident though, didn't I?
You did actually. Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's how I earn a living really, Nina.
No, it's always been bothering me because I just think, how does it, if you're taking them all at the same time sort of thing as well,
yeah,
how does your body know, right, that goes there, that goes there? That's for that.
Like, I don't know that vitamins have thrown me a bit on this, because I don't think that vitamins necessarily go to a specific place, do they? I mean,
no.
The vitamin D goes to your fingernails. But, yeah, I mean, really, we're asking how painkillers work, aren't we?
Yeah, or how does it, like, even when, like...
Or antihistamines.
You know, like, sometimes you get, like, the older people, like, I used to be a carer, and you'd have to give them, like, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they would have, like, a big pile of tablets that they would have to take all at once for all different things in the body.
Yeah.
And I just think, how does it know what goes where and what does what?
I think you're asking me how drugs work.
Yeah, just anything. How does your body know where it's most supposed to use that for? Where does it put this? And how does it know that's for your headache?
All right. You're on the board. I mean, this might not be a brilliant question, or it might be a brilliant question. I'm not quite sure which it is, Nina.
Yeah. As long as you know what I'm trying to...
Well, I think I know what you're trying to say. I mean, it's... I mean, if you've got athlete's foot, you put it on your foot. You put the powder on your foot. But if you've got something... If you've got hay fever, you swallow something, it goes in your tummy.
Yeah.
How does it end up stopping your nose running?
Yeah, this is what I mean. And then if you took a paracetamol at the same time, would you have a headache or... Anything like that. Or even like you say, the multivitamins. How does it know that that's your vitamin, that's your paracetamol?
All right. I mean, I hopefully someone will be able to answer it. I'm not sure I can boil your question down into one sentence, but everybody's heard it now. So if they want to have a crack at it, I'll put them straight to the front of the queue. Thank you, Nina. 12:14 is the time. I'll squeeze in one more before the break. John's in Nuneaton. John, question or answer?
A question, please.
Carry on, John.
Downing Street...
Yes.
TV reporters,
yes,
they always shout questions across to somebody getting out of the car going into number 10.
Are you going to resign, John?
Yes, and they never get an answer, and they always shout. I mean, you guarantee it's going to happen, and,
yep,
and you can guarantee I'm sitting at home watching it on the telly and thinking, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah.
That for?
You've just answered your own question, John.
What?
You're sitting at home watching it on the telly.
Yeah, but
so it just makes for marginally more interesting footage for the evening bulletin than it would if they all sat there in silence watching the car pull up and the politician get out and walk through the door.
Is that the best they can come up with?
Yeah. What do you want them to do? What do you want them to do? Tap dance? Chris Mason leading a conga up and down Downing Street.
Sit in silence and let me watch them wave to the crowd.
That would be the alternative. It is just content. I mean, and every now and then, I can't think of any example of it actually happening, but you might actually get a response.
Rare as
hen's teeth, John, but still absolutely unknown. But yeah, the answer is just, and it's a very early example of content creation, which we think of as an online phenomenon, but it is simply because you are watching it on the telly, and it would be even more boring if they were all sort of silently watching them in and watching them out. Listen, can I tell you a secret?
Go on.
I think it's one of the daftest things we do. I still don't know why we do it. You know, we send reporters to places to tell us things that they don't need to be there to tell us. And you know, I understand sticking a microphone in front of eyewitnesses and things like that is very different. But the Downing Street stuff, political journalists and political editors spend their lives filming pieces to camera in front of the door. And they could be doing it from home. They could be doing it from the bath.
Well, the best one of that is when it's a storm and it's raining.
Yeah.
And you're guaranteed that you'll have the reporters stood out in the rain.
Yeah.
Without the hoods up as well, with the hair sort of getting completely soaked.
There's one famous clip.
It's raining.
I can see that. Yeah, I know. It's very windy here. Oh, is it? Oh, there goes my hat. There's one famous one. I think she got hit by a fish once. And that's, again, you know, our lives are enriched by this kind of content, John. So that is your answer. It is simply to sort of make for a slightly more interesting report for inclusion in the Evening Bulletin. And yes, I will be taking a round of applause for that. Thank you, John. 12:17 is the time.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Okay, this kitchen table office situation isn't working anymore. My home office needs to feel less making do and more CEO of my own corner.
Right. Wayfair it is.
Exactly. A proper desk to spread out on, a comfy ergonomic chair, and a stylish lamp that makes video calls a little brighter.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. Just one tap to get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair UK app and shop now.
Sun on the dashboard. The kind of day that makes you want to take the long way home. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeoman's Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour is underway. Acorns and drugs. Or indeed, I mean, oddly, the acorn question was inspired by the fact that it is a drug when it is consumed by King Charles Spaniels. And also, I happen to know, by horses. But those are the two questions remaining on the board. Why is the acorn crop so wildly inconsistent? And how do drugs know which bit of the body to go to? And that's Nina's question. And I may not be doing it justice, but that was the general gist of it. Craig's in Edinburgh. Craig, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Craig.
It's an answer to the acorn question.
Oh, marvellous.
Yeah, so basically acorn or oak trees have random what they call mast years, where oaks in sync, you could say, have an overwhelming number of acorns that they produce one season. And the reason for that is to kind of overwhelm predators. There's not enough acorns to feed the things that eat acorns, so there's enough left for other oaks to grow.
Oh, what year? Mast year?
A mast year, M-A-S-T, yeah, a mast year.
That's what it's called?
Yep.
And it's like a bumper crop of acorns every now and then?
Yep, and then the years after, the sort of 1 or 2 years after, they actually have less of a crop, and that also helps keep predator numbers down because there's not enough food for them. So they're basically just controlling their own population through the mast year and their acorn crop.
And do we know what determines... I told off David for saying that trees know things, but how does the tree know that it's a mast year, if you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. I mean, there's been a bit of research done on that recently. I don't have the exact answer, but you think it's to do with a warm spring.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's evolutionary, obviously, and the impact that the environment has upon predators is going to be the same thing. The same environmental phenomenon will be impacting on the oak tree, so that the trees that have survived best are the ones that respond to the environmental change in the way that we're describing.
Yeah.
Qualifications?
This is going to be a weird one, but I'm a whiskey maker, and in my last role making whiskey, I was in charge of buying oak casks for a big distillery, so I decided to educate myself on the species that we were buying.
That doesn't sound weird at all. That sounds brilliant. So you're clearly a very conscientious whiskey cask buyer. Do you buy them new?
In the Scotch industry, we're generally buying secondhand, but the company I worked for, what we would do is we'd buy them new and then we'd season them with what we were going to fill them with, so either sherry in Spain or bourbon in the States.
Wow. Are you still in the game?
Still in the game, not in that particular role, but yeah, very much still in the whiskey making game, and I'm actually just out of a meeting in one of the blending labs in Edinburgh, so I'm fairly happy at the moment, shall we
say. You take your work home with you, do you, Craig?
Oh, whenever I can.
I love it. Round of applause for Craig. Feeling no pain in Edinburgh. It's 22 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Taff's in Cardiff. Taff, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Taff.
I have a ridiculously loud snore. It's always weapons grade. But it never wakes me up.
Oh.
But people next door can hear it.
Really?
My girlfriend has got a cute little girly type snore, you know, the sort.
What's wrong with your phone? I mean, it's not, I can hear you, but it is all a bit weird, Taff. I'm not going to lie. Carry on.
Oh, so I wonder, why is it that my snore, which is so loud, never wakes me up?
And your girlfriend's cute little snore can wake you up?
Yes.
Okay, I quite like this question. We can probably work it out, can't we?
I can't work it out. I mean, you
probably have woken yourself up once or twice with your snoring, but you didn't realise it was your snoring that woke you up, because all you know is that you're suddenly awake.
Well, if I'm just nodding off,
yeah,
as well, in an aircraft or something, and I suddenly snore, that will wake me up. But once I'm asleep, nothing.
Are you sort of moving in and out of your phone area? Are you treating your phone like bobbing for apples on Halloween?
No, promise I'm not. I'm sat in a chair right next to my window.
Anyway, oh, I wonder if the window is signal. Anyway, I'll try and find out for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
How do you know? Have your neighbours told you they can hear you snore?
Yeah, I've just come back off holiday, and the people in the rooms either side, who we were friendly with, said, yes, we can hear you snore badly.
Oh, Lord. And still friendly.
Yeah, I had to buy him a drink, but... Yeah,
no, fair enough. I like it. 24 minutes after 12. Why don't our own snores wake us up, when much quieter snores, if they're coming from others, will do? 03456060... I'm going to do... It's my impression of Taff. 03456060973. Did that work? I don't know, really. I'm not a microphone expert. Yeah. Callum's in Basildon. Callum, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James.
Carry on, Callum.
So, I am a registered nurse.
Oh, yes. Are there any unregistered nurses?
Well, the nurse isn't a legally protected name in the UK. So
okay.
Anyone who looks after someone can legally call themselves a nurse.
Well, there was me being a smart ass, and actually, it turns out that it is actually a relevant and significant thing. Carry on. Sorry, Callum.
In fact, I've only just qualified, James. I don't know if you remember, I was calling during COVID because I was worried about getting into university.
I
because
do.
Of the Graves mishap.
Yes, of course.
And you've nailed it. Last year, and now I'm a cardiology HDU.
Mate, have one of these before you go any further. Great work, Callum. Great work. And thank you as well for choosing to do this for a living. Anyway, where were we?
Well, I was going to answer the question about painkillers and how drugs know where to go.
In fact,
they don't know where to go. You were kind of on the right lines about for instance, anti-inflammatories, they reduce inflammation all around the body. In fact, everywhere in your body has an effect by this anti-inflammatory. But it's just the pain that you're feeling because of the over-inflamed area becoming reduced.
Yeah, of course. Because don't some people take painkillers before they do marathons?
I'm not sure, but...
I may have made that up. In fact, I may have just done something terrible in terms of medical advice, which is no one should ever pay any attention to anything I say ever, but particularly when we're talking... Just rings a vague bell. It's sort of ache a bit less or something. So everywhere is going to be affected, but you're only going to notice it in the places that are extraordinarily painful in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
Love it. What about antihistamines?
So, again, antihistamines, so you normally take an antihistamine for, say, an allergic reaction.
When you
have an allergic reaction, your body releases histamines into your bloodstream, and then where places that are particularly
so oddly enough, if you had a rash and you had hay fever and you took an antihistamine, it would affect both.
Depends on the rash. Depends what's causing it.
But it's obviously being caused by a histamine producing phenomenon. That's science.
Yeah, it goes into the bloodstream and spreads around your body and affects your whole body.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. Qualifications? Go on, say it again.
I'm a registered nurse.
Boom. Lovely stuff, Callum. Jim's in Lanark. Jim, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
I'm losing sleep over this. You know the pound sign that we use?
Yes.
It's a funny little L with a couple of lines, but where on earth do we get that from? Because if you look at pounds... Hmm. Pounds in weight, you know, when a baby's born.
Yeah.
It's 8 pounds something, but it's an L and a B. What's all that about?
This is a mad question. Some questions feel like we should have had them before. Do you know what I mean? Because we've all seen the pound sign every day.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had this one before. And there it is.
I mean, I can understand the yen, the Japanese yen. It's a Y, fair enough. That's the first letter. But what's happening with the dollar? That's an S with two vertical lines to it.
You're only allowed one question, champ. Calm down. So, what does the pound sign... Where does it come from? It? Pure and simple. Mate, probably to do with printing presses, but that's not going to answer the question of why they elected to go for the... What is it, really? It's a sort of squiggly L with a couple of lines through it.
It's a fancy calligraphical L with two lines through it.
Yeah. It is, isn't it? Why did we go for that?
I think someone's been on the whiskey when they've designed it.
I doubt it. 28 minutes after. Thank you for that, Jim. I like it. Where does that come from? 28 minutes after 12 is the time. Terry's in Lower Kingswood. Terry, question or answer?
Hello. I've got a question, please, James.
Carry on, Terry.
I was literally eating a bit of fruit this morning, like a kiwi fruit, for instance.
Well, was it a kiwi fruit or not?
It was a kiwi fruit.
That's a very odd morning snack, isn't it? Hey, do you like? I've always found kiwi fruits to be strangely sort of flavourless.
No, not the Marks and Spencer's ones.
Really, they're hitting the spot, are they?
It's a golden kiwi fruit. It's ridiculous.
Oh, living the dream. Carry on, Terry. Go on.
Anyway, I was eating it and I was thinking, how did we know these were safe to eat, or how do we decide if something's safe to eat from like history? You know, because there's so many poisonous fruits and stuff out there that you can't eat. So how did we originally know that you can eat something?
This is one of my favourite subjects. It really is. I think the answer's pretty obvious, actually. But it's not just eating things. It's like, who first... So you think it's a mystery. So I used to ask my kids, who first tried milk? Who first looked at a cow some big old udders and thought, I'm going to give those a squeeze and drink whatever comes out. But one of my daughters one of my daughters said to me, like, talk about from the mouths of babes, she said, well, obviously they watched a calf being suckled, Dad, and then decided to try it for themselves because it was clearly really good stuff. It was clearly really healthy. So the obvious answer to your question is people, you know, trial and error. Drop dead, and everyone else in the tribe would think, let's not have any of those berries, thank you very much. Or you'd get your dog to eat it, like old David with the acorns. So there is no other possible answer to this, except that we...
Because they can't test everything, can they?
Literally just have thought, let's try that. And some of it, I mean, what would be the most surprising? Probably mushrooms, right? So yesterday you picked some mushrooms, fried them up, lovely jubbly. The next day you found some other mushrooms, looked a bit different, everyone dropped dead or started tripping.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, okay. I think that's the answer, is it? That's all it can be.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I know.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Another round of applause for me. Cheers, Terry. I've got to get some of those golden kiwi fruits for myself on the way, see if I can change my entire relationship with kiwi fruits. What a day. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Celebrations are taking place in Gaza and Israel after the first phase of Donald Trump's peace plan was agreed. Israel's government will meet later to formally ratify the ceasefire deal with Hamas. An exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian prisoners is set to follow. Stay with LBC for the latest developments through the day and follow live on the LBC app. And customers of 5 water companies are facing higher than expected increases to their bills. The firms had argued the original decision by Ofwat left them unable to meet their regulatory requirements. LBC weather, dry and bright with sunny spells in the south, cloud further north with some light rain in Northern Ireland and parts of Cumbria. A high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Early bird offers in summer. Sunday in the Furniture Village sale, with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing, someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Now, listen carefully. I want you to think of selling your car. Who's going to buy that car? Keep thinking. Struggling to know where to look? On Motorway, there are 7,500 verified dealers who are ready and waiting to bid on your car. It's not magic, it's Motorway. Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions, min spend £60 and charges apply. Max saving £20, new customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
33 minutes after 12 is the time. It didn't work, did it? So two very unprofessional things have happened on the programme today. Would you like to hear about them? The first, no, the second, as you can probably tell, is I miscalculated how long it would take me to eat a mouthful of overnight oats before we returned from the last break. But I nearly missed the other bit of the show because I decided to take a comfort break, as Americans call them. And while I was in there, I heard some strange noises outside. And I heard Mylene Klass and Kate Garraway walking up a corridor, talking to each other, and I realised they were being filmed, because they were filming us last week for the same project. And I thought, well, if I come out now, I'm going to ruin the take, aren't I, as we call it in showbiz circles, the take. I'm going to ruin the take. And then I thought, well, I can't even... Can I even use the flush? Can I mean, this is possibly a little bit too much information. So I put my ear to the door of the lavatory, which is gender neutral, actually, the lavatory, which is just, so you wouldn't think it, would you, listening to some of the output on this radio station, but the toilet, approximately 12 paces from where we're sitting, is open to all. Come one, come all. So I put my ear to the door, and I waited until I heard the director's voice saying something, and I thought, well, if he's talking, they're not filming. They don't say cut, it's not, you know. And then I sort of poked my head around the door and said, hello, do you mind if I need... Anyway, that's showbiz, that is. So there you go. Two examples of epic amateurism from me, not making sure the coast was clear before taking a comfort break and completely miscalculating how much time I would need to enjoy a tasty mouthful of overnight oats using one of the recipes from Jamie Oliver's new book, where he does a whole suggestion. So you put like a mothership of overnight oats in the fridge and then you can zuz them up every morning, but before you come to work. That's the end of my TED talk. Tony's in Sittingbourne. Tony, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Tony.
Eggs.
Oh, yes, eggs is eggs.
Okay, so I've been boiling eggs probably 6 or 12 at a time, and I have them every morning.
Right. Have you thought about changing to overnight oats for a bit of variety?
I was going to do that, but usually I'm on the phone and it sort of takes me. I can't eat it, otherwise I start talking to people and I've got a mouthful of overnight oats, so I don't do that.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do that. You sound like a right Herbert, wouldn't you?
So when I boiled the eggs, I was wondering, because on the pack or on the box, they'd never say eat by or consume by a date, and then they don't say if boiled, they last a bit longer. So I was wondering, if you boil an egg and then put it back in the fridge once it's cooled down, do they last longer than fresh eggs, or do they last the same time? Because I had some eggs in there for a rather long time. One boiled egg sort of rattled past where the butter is. I thought, oh, I wonder how old that is, because I usually keep the fresher ones to the right and the older ones on the left. But anyway, so I took a bite into the egg.
Ooh. And right, that's an answer to Terry's question.
Exactly.
Isn't it? Like, literally, how would you know whether the egg was safe or not? You'd have to take a knee. You'd have to have it. That's amazing. I can't believe that you've managed to bring another question into your own question. Anyway, carry on.
So I took a chance.
Yeah,
and
you did.
It tasted really fresh. So I knew it was a different type of egg because I use two brands, one being Woodland Farm and the other one is just a bog standard one from the co-op.
Why do you do that?
Because I've got a friend who owns Woodland Farm and he gives me eggs.
You don't want to spend a lot of money on your eggs, but your mate sorts you out with a nice little, and in return you've just given him a free advert on the biggest talk show on commercial radio in this country.
Talking about adverts, since I won that Mystery Hour game, it's the best thing, and if anyone's in any doubt that it doesn't enrich their lives, they ought to buy one. There's an advert for you there.
There we go, it's all going on. So, the question is, does a boiled egg stay fresh longer than a raw egg?
Yeah, edible. Is it safe to eat longer?
I like that question. It's a nice question. Don't you get a bit constipated?
No, because the thing is with an egg, it's high in protein and low in fat. Because I've been on this weight loss plan, it's important to have high protein, low fat.
Okay.
And taking your advice as well, when you look on the back of a packet of anything, the more ingredients and additives it has in it, the less healthy it would appear to be. So an egg's just got an egg in it.
Never a truer word has been spoken on this program than an egg has just got an egg in it. In it. Thank you, Tony. I love that question. Brought Terry's question into it about how do you know food's healthy or not, and there's living proof there. Tony teaching Terry, taste it, and then gets a little dig in for Mystery Hour, little big up for Mystery Hour, which he has won in the past and is clearly delighted with, as indeed are all people who have availed themselves of said opportunity, and then a nice little bit of egg-based inquiry as well. The perfect call to the perfect hour of radio, your Mystery Hour. Brian's in Wigan. Brian, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Brian.
It's an addition to your previous caller, who talked about the drug distribution.
He's not just a nurse, mate. He's a registered nurse.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Actually, it was just an addition to that, really, to say that drugs don't necessarily go all over the place. It depends on the properties of that particular molecule itself. So just simply, for example, if it's more water soluble, it dissolves in water, it'll go to a more watery area of your body. Oh. Or if it's more sort of greasy, it'll go into the sort of more fatty areas of your body, and lots of other things as well. So that was really the answer.
And that's why we take them in different ways.
You can do, yes, of course. And the slight caveat as well, for example, I think mentioned vitamins as well.
Yes.
Some of those are your body actually actively transports those using mechanisms to get them into the right places. So there are some other kind of things that go on. It's kind of a complicated world.
I like it. Yeah. Qualifications?
I'm a emeritus professor of pharmaceutical chemistry, so basic life of drug discovery and drug design.
Wow. Did you discover any drugs?
I did, actually, yes. And a couple on the market. Well, there's an anti-cancer drug, and which is on the market, and also a drug which is, again, what your previous caller was talking about, was for asthma as well. So,
what an astonishing legacy.
Thank you.
No, you're very welcome. I mean, I kind of asked that question almost sort of flippantly, but you come back with I discovered an anti-cancer drug. Russ, what do you
I'm
do for an uncle?
As well. I'm still at it as well, actually.
That's amazing. I'm going to give you a Ray Liotta, mate, because that's a proper moment, that, for me. That was thank you very much.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
And now an emeritus.
Brilliant.
Ray Liotta recipient. Thank you, Brian. Oh, wow, what a moment. What a moment. Thank you, Brian. Take care. Daniel's in Gateshead. Daniel, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Daniel.
Hiya. So, okay, bear with me. So my question is, why is it that the nutritional value of cow's milk in the supermarket doesn't change?
What?
So, right, bear with me. So as you may or may not know, I own a coffee shop in Gateshead.
In the park?
In the park, indeed, yeah, in Saltwell Park. So
Saltwell Park.
Saltwell Park.
Saltwell Park in Gateshead.
Yes, indeed, yes. In Gateshead, yes. So I tend to look at these sorts of things. I also, as my customers will know, I stopped serving cow's milk about 2 years ago. But that's a different story.
Everyone knows that now, not just your customers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm renowned for it anyway. But anyway, so the point is that cow's milk is not a fixed thing, okay? So the nutritional value of cow's milk, at least the consistency and all these sorts of things, changes all the time, okay? So it changes throughout the calf's life as it grows up, but also it depends on pastures. So I know this through coffee competitions,
right?
Okay, so that you have to kind of have different milks in different places, and then mix them together to have a more consistent kind of product.
Well, isn't it because the vat that the supermarket milk is coming out of such massive vats? It's all mixed in together.
Yes, that could be one thing.
So what you mean is that
My hunch is that it's fortified.
Right? But no, because they have to tell you if it's fortified. You can buy fortified milk. It has a different coloured lid.
Ah, I didn't know that.
So you used to be able to buy gold top milk would have more cream in it than other milk, and that you're too young to know this, aren't you? You are.
I'm not necessarily talking about the different types of fat levels, because that's a whole different thing. That's got to do with homogenization, right? So what ends up by happening is that it depends if they put it through different screens to then take out different levels of fat, etc., right? But when you look at the nutritional value of milk, so things like the calcium, potassium, the amount of vitamins, all these sorts of things.
How can it be so uniform?
It's
a good question.
It hasn't changed in 3 years.
It's a good question, but I think it will probably be because it all goes into such huge urns.
But then that in itself's weird, right? Because then you'd expect a cow, if let's say you've got a million cows, all the cows are having the kind of same grass at one time of year, let's say November, but there's not the same amount of grass in November as there is in July.
You've got a point,
Maybe
it's an average.
Grass.
Maybe it's an average over the year.
Oh, okay. But then that's a bit cheeky because it's supposed to tell you what's in it.
I agree, but, I don't see what the alternative... So, how come milk always has the same nutritional values, despite the fact that, obviously... environmental factors will be impacting upon the nutritional value of the milk while it's still in the cow.
Yes, exactly.
I quite like that question. You take your work very seriously, don't you, Daniel?
I very much do, yes.
No, I think that's a wonderful thing. So do I. I know it doesn't always come across that way, but I promise you I do. Is it the Prism Cafe?
It's called Prism Coffee.
Prism Coffee in the park with
because I
look at that. 4.7 on TripAdvisor, Daniel.
Oh, okay, that's the low one, but yeah.
Oh, all right. What's the best one? Which are you happiest about?
I think it's also 4.7 on Google, but
well, that's pretty good.
It's the one I tend to care about the most.
Fair enough, 4.7 on Google. I think my last book was only 4.6 on Amazon, so you're kicking it. You're knocking it out of the park, Daniel.
I appreciate it, thank you.
Well played. What's the special offer for James O'Brien listeners who make their way to the Prism Coffee in Swalwell Park today?
Some of the best coffee in the North East.
What more do you want? Seriously, honestly. Perks are for losers. Thank you, Daniel. Guy is in... the time now is 12:45.
LBC's Make Some Noise.
This Friday is Make Some Noise Day, LBC's charity fundraiser helping brilliant projects right across the UK. And right now, you can get involved with an exciting prize. You and one guest could be exclusively joining us behind the scenes here at LBC. Start the day with a coffee and a Q&A with Nick Ferrari. Then grab your spot in the studio to watch me, James O'Brien, in action. We'll give you a private tour of the studios here at Global, from LBC to Heart, Capital, and even the Newsagents podcast, before you catch up with Sheila Fogarty and hear about how she puts her show together. Then it's off for a lavish afternoon tea at Soho House Hotel, and as if that's not enough, you'll also get two tickets to see my Full Disclosure podcast live in London on the 19th of February. To enter this competition, text the word STUDIO to 84850. That's STUDIO to 84850. By entering, you'll have the chance to make a voluntary £10 donation, which will be added to your phone bill. 100% goes to LBC's charity, Make Some Noise. You've got until 4pm on Friday the 10th of October to enter. Standard network rates apply. You must be 18 or over to enter. For full terms and conditions, including prize date restrictions, visit lbc.co.uk. And good luck. Make sure you stay with LBC this Friday for more Make Some Noise Day and more ways to help our fantastic charity.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The world is witnessing a historic moment. Egypt's president hails the peace deal as families in Gaza and Israel celebrate the news. Now the peace, is it really there?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale, with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today. And hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes. G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour. Same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew. Or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:49 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Questions that still need answers. We've done the acorns, we've done the medicines, I did Downing Street. Snoring, and also Taff, lots of people are getting in touch to say you should see the doctor about sleep apnea. Because I'm not qualified to give any medical advice or anything like that, but quite a lot of people commenting on if the volume of your snoring is as loud as you say, then you should definitely have a chat with the doctors. Right, where does the pound sign come from? Such an odd thing to settle on. And the fresh eggs last longer or less long than boiled eggs, 03456060973. And then the milk question, Daniel's milk question at the end. How come the nutritional content of milk is always the same when seasonal fluctuations and various other variables must surely mean that if you've got 2 pints of milk bought 6 months apart, they're actually going to have different nutritional content? Guy's in Rochester. Guy, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Go on.
Love this part of your show, by the way.
Thank you, mate.
that sounds awful. It sounds like I don't like the rest of your show. I do love this bit. Question. I've noticed this over the years, and I nearly didn't ring in. I've tried it before, and then I thought, oh, no, I shouldn't ask. I'm married with two daughters, and whenever my wife or my daughters get surprised, they put their hand over their mouth. And I've noticed it on DIY programs and stuff where there's a big reveal where, you know, the person walks in and they either put one or both hands over their mouth.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever done it, and I can't remember.
Is it more girls than boys? Is it more girls than boys?
Why would you do it? If it's a girl thing, why would it be? I don't know. It's,
The more I spotted it, the more
I saw it, and like on every, like the programs, and whenever there was a, because a lot of them have that sort of format now where there's this big reveal at the end.
Yeah.
Overgo the mouths. Yeah.
And not the boys, not the fellas. The fellas don't do it, even in DIY SOS.
Just sit there with their hands on their hips and go, oh, that's all right.
Easy come, easy go. Yeah. I like this. Is it good? Well, yeah. I said, what's going on there then?
I don't know.
I know you don't. I was just sort of doing a rhetorical.
I've asked my kids, and I'm like, why'd you do it?
Could they be copying it off the TV? No, because then it wouldn't, because the men are watching the same TV program.
I don't know.
I know you don't. I'm just thinking out loud.
My daughter don't watch. They don't really watch anything I watch.
No, but, tell me about it. Slow Horses we watched together, actually.
Slow Horses?
Yeah, it's Gary Oldman. It's a spy thing with Gary Oldman in it. It's brilliant.
Oh, yes.
We all enjoy that. All right.
I'll try that then.
Yeah, give that a whirl.
Family Unity.
Yeah, it always helps, doesn't it? Netflix. Like the royal family all sitting on the sofa watching the same television programme. Those were the days. I shall find out for it. Well, I don't know if I will, but I'll like, why do we do that then? Cheers, Guy. And Guy...
Yeah.
The other 14 hours are all right, mate, you know, that I do every week.
I shouldn't have said that, really.
Well, I'm glad you did. Yeah. It's a lovely thing to say, but as you say, it just sort of creates the opportunity for people to think maybe the other 14 hours aren't up to sniff. I'm teasing. Thank you, Guy. Lovely question. Why do we do that? I've seen some men do it, but it's usually... Women put their hands over their mouth and other members of the species don't, chiefly the males. Duncan's in St. Austell in Cornwall. Duncan, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on, Duncan.
It's an answer to the milk question.
Yes.
And he was saying, why doesn't it change?
He was, yes.
And every type of milk is standardised to whichever type of milk we want to drink. And that's done by machineries in the factory.
And how do they do that, then?
Right. Homogenization, separation. So you'll have 4% fat.
Deviation, repetition.
Fat. Yeah. I'm not going to...
Doesn't it say on the label...
Anything they want, anything that they want to sell to the consumer, they will produce.
But doesn't it say on the label... It doesn't say like it's an average. It says something else sometimes. Because this isn't about fat content. This is all the nutritional content. It's not just the fat content.
But the nutritional stuff comes out of the food. And to be honest, the cow is produced in it predominantly, obviously.
Typical amounts, it says on the label. Typical amounts. So there'll be a little bit of deviation, won't there? So Daniel's answer is probably deviation. It's all in the word typical, isn't it?
It's there to feed a calf. The fact that we rub
I knew that, mate. Everyone knows that. That's not a mystery. What's milk for? It's like, you know, pull the other one.
Oh, no.
I'm going to give you a round of applause just to get you off the radio. There you go. Still 55 is the time. Romano is in Harrow. Romano, question or answer?
Hi, answer.
Carry on.
It's an answer to the pound sign.
Oh, marvellous. We're going to clear the board this week.
So if you listen to Italian radio or Italian TV, when they give you the exchange rate, they always say the pound as la lira sterlina. Lira sterlina, like the old Italian lira was before.
Yeah.
And the Italian lira used to be abbreviated in the same way, with a sort of pound sign. And a pound in weight and a pound sterling also, I think the chap said about LB.
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to libra.
That's also
in Italian pound. As well. It's Imperial Roman measurements.
Of course, libra, like the scales, like the star sign.
Yeah, is the pound sign. So one libra is
so
one,
it's
one
Latin. It's weight. Latin, isn't it? It's Latin, Romano. Yeah, it's all about the Latin. I've got the Latin. I love it.
I don't think your Brexiteer listeners will like the answer.
I haven't got any left. They've all gone somewhere else. They're all tuning into something else. They're all listening to Mantovani. Qualifications?
That I speak Italian, and I've made the connection that way. So
grazie mille. round of applause for Romano, please. I've used up all my Italian now. But I can tell you, Donald Trump has paid tribute to Mystery Hour in the last few minutes. So he's been in the news a lot today, but this is a really special moment.
Have you given any more thought to possibly suspending habeas corpus to not only deal with these insurrectionists across the nation, but also to continue rapidly deporting illegal aliens?
Yeah, is suspending who?
Habeas corpus, sir.
Oh, I don't know. I'd rather leave that to Christie. What do you think?
No, sir, I haven't been a part of any discussions on that.
Habeas corpus. That's perfect, because Romano was just talking about Latin. Habeas corpus, or sort of having the body, I think, is a crucial part of jurisprudence. I've listened to it again. So habeas corpus, he thinks habeas corpus is a person.
Have you given any more thought to possibly suspending habeas corpus to not only deal with these insurrectionists across the nation, but also to continue rapidly deporting illegal aliens?
Yeah, is suspending who?
Habeas corpus, sir.
Oh, I don't know. I'd rather leave that to Christie. What do you think?
No, sir, I haven't been a part of any discussions on that.
Everyone knows habeas corpus is a brave Hungarian peasant girl, right? It's coming up to 12:58, last call of the day to Simon in Reading. Question or answer, Simon?
I have an answer, sir.
Bring it on, Simon.
To snoring.
Oh, yes.
I'm a heavy snorer. I've been investigating why we don't wake ourselves up when we're in a deep state of sleep.
Excellent.
It's because the brain filters, the auditory processing filters out the noises that are constant background noises, like your traffic running down a street and so forth.
Of course it does. Yeah, you're so... that makes perfect... Go on, sorry.
But if somebody was to speak to you or come into your room, your hearing is waiting for things like that. So that would wake you up.
Of course it is. Yes, of course, because it's alerting you to the possible danger posed by someone else's snores, but not by your own, which you've kind of absorbed into your normal existence. Your qualifications, snore a lot.
Well, I've been investigating into something that's actually the reverse of that. Now, I listen to the radio overnight. Of course, it's LBC.
Yes.
Because I can't sleep without it in the background. Can't listen to music. And sometimes my hearing stops hearing what's on the radio, but I'm still awake.
Yeah.
And then it suddenly comes back. So it's the reverse of the thing.
Oh, yes, and exactly that. Yes.
Yeah. It is fascinating.
It is.
It really is.
I'm out of time.
I'm getting excited.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Have a round of applause. Oh, I'm going to give Callum the game, I think, because we spoke to him a bit during lockdown. He's worked very hard to get his nursing qualifications, and he's a lovely man. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, listen to a range of podcasts, including Full Disclosure, which is a doozy this week with Jamie Oliver, or James O'Brien Daily, best bits of this show, distilled down to a single hour every day. So download the official LBC app from your app store now. It's free, coming up at 4 on LBC. Tom Sawbridge. And now, Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. Now, there are, of course, a million reasons to be nervous about this peace deal that we all woke up to the news of this morning. I choose to, for now anyway, focus in the first hour of the programme on the celebrating families who've learned today that their loved ones are going to be released from captivity. I choose to celebrate and focus on and give time to those little Gazan children that I'm sure you've seen, if you've been on social media, jumping up and down in the streets and in their tents that they've been living in with joy and hope, because there are no planes overhead today. Well, certainly no planes bombing them. So hope, but tinged with realism. Let's talk about it all in the next 3 hours.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
today. LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, world leaders have urged Israel and Hamas to fulfil their commitments after agreeing the first phase of a ceasefire deal. It includes the partial withdrawal of Israeli troops before Hamas releases 20 living hostages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. Zakir Starmer has welcomed the deal while on an official visit to India.
This agreement must now be implemented in full, without delay, and be accompanied by the immediate lifting of all restrictions on life-saving humanitarian aid to Gaza. The UK will support these crucial immediate steps and the next stages of the talks to ensure the full implementation of the peace plan.
Celebrations have taken place in both Israel and Gaza after the terms were agreed at talks in Egypt overnight. Leila Moran is the Lib Dem MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, whose family is Palestinian. She's told LBC she's feeling mixed emotions.
I don't want to put a dampener on this. This is a significant moment. It is different. You know, it is under Trump. He has a sway with Netanyahu that, frankly, Biden didn't have. So with any luck, it will hold this time. We've got a long way to go. But yeah, today is a better day than yesterday.
Also this afternoon, Madeleine McCann's sister Amelie has begun giving evidence at the trial of two women accused of stalking the family. She's described messages she received as creepy and disturbing. 24-year-old Julia Van Delt and Karen Spragg, who's 61, both deny the charges against them. A gathering is taking place in Manchester to remember the bravery of the victims of the terror attack last week. People are being encouraged to light candles and hold vigils in solidarity. And more pubs, clubs and restaurants could be allowed to stay open into the early hours. Ministers are pushing plans to cut red tape, which they say is holding back the hospitality sector. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 18 points at 95.30. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather largely cloudy in the west with patchy light rain in Northern Ireland and Western Scotland. Partly cloudy elsewhere with the east seeing the best of the sunshine, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you. It was good to wake up this morning to better news, wasn't it? I don't think any of us should be under any illusions about the bumps in the road ahead and the difficulties still ongoing in Gaza in particular for the people living in Gaza in that desolate landscape that it has become in the last 2 years because of the war between Israel and Hamas. But let's just try and take stock, shall we, at this hour of the events overnight and the announcements overnight and what they will in the very short term lead to. And later in the programme, we can expand our conversation to look to the medium to longer term, I think, as well. And I'd like, after 3 o'clock, to focus on what we here in the UK, what you as an individual or as a family have learned over these last 2 years, because it's a story that has travelled with most people, isn't it, one way or another, in the last 2 years, unlike many other stories ongoing in the world. Let's start at last night, shall we, when President Trump, in a scene reminiscent of 9/11, when George Bush, then president, had a whisper in the ear about what was happening at the Twin Towers. President Trump on this occasion was interrupted by the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio while hosting a round table in the White House. Mr. Rubio interrupted proceedings briefly to hand Donald Trump a note, and the president shared what the note said.
I was just given a note by the Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East and they're going to need me pretty quickly.
Well, the president then spoke a little later with Fox News's Sean Hannity and praised his team for their work, his own team, for their work in achieving the deal.
It's a great honor to be involved in it. We had some tremendous help, as you know, with everybody from Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner and Marco, and we had everybody, JD, the whole group was just amazing. And the military was, as you know, very instrumental in getting this done. We have a great military with great leadership. The whole world came together, to be honest. So many countries that you wouldn't have even thought of, and they came together. The world has come together around this deal. And that's something I would say that without that wouldn't happen.
And that's a really important point. I mean, there are still people who look at that deal and say, where are the Palestinians in that deal at this point? Again, we can talk about that a little later in the program as well. But Donald Trump spoke to some families of Israeli hostages, and amongst the group were former hostages themselves who'd been held in Gaza after the news of the ceasefire agreement was announced.
What do you guys have to say to President Trump?
Thank you.
Thank you
very much, everybody.
You did it!
Wow. You did it! Wow.
This is amazing.
Mr. President, we believe in you. We know you've done so much for us over the past, since you became a president, and even before that. And we trust you fulfill the mission until every hostage, every 48 of the hostages are home. Thank you so much. Blessed be the peacemakers.
God bless you, Mr. President. God bless America.
Thank you very much. You just take care of yourselves. The hostages will come back. They're coming, all coming back on Monday.
That moment when he said they're all coming back on Monday, I think was the first time those people you heard and anyone had that date confirmation of the plan for the release day. As I understand it, again, from accounts I follow on social media that I trust, Red Cross vehicles have been getting into place at safe places, and transfers of some hostages have already begun to those agreed safe places. So we'll see exactly what unfolds over the weekend. Cheers and celebrations, as you would imagine, rang out in Hostage Square in Tel Aviv. No less in Gaza. I saw some lovely footage on social media of some kids, I don't know where it was specifically in Gaza, but for some kids jumping up and down and playing and celebrating with their parents as well, which was good to see. Speaking at a press conference in India, Prime Minister Keir Starmer welcomed the news of the acceptance by the parties of the deal.
I strongly welcome the news that a deal has been reached on the first stage of the peace plan in Gaza. This is a moment of profound relief that we felt around the world, but particularly for the hostages, their families, and for the civilian population of Gaza.